Ready, we call the meeting order. You got an agenda there?
Are you showing off?
I got 6:36.
What's that? Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Chairman Donaldson.
There.
Legislator Roberts.
Something there.
Yeah. It's new. Say yes, here. Legislator Hebner. Legislator Rom.
Present.
Legislator Rodriguez.
Are you really
Chairwoman
Barardi. I am. I came before you.
You didn't even serve with Barardi. Present.
First action is to okay the minutes for the May 20th.
I'll move that we give them our okie dokie.
Alrighty, second on the meeting. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Anybody opposed? Okay. Second is the rule of the minutes for the June 10th special session.
I'll move it.
Second.
Already moved and seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? No. Alrighty, we're going to start with establishing a policy to prevent the use of public funds to the place of likeness or name of elected officials on all promotional and informational signage.
I'll move for discussion.
I'll second.
Alright, so just so we understand that this is a policy, it's not a law, so with a policy, they're easily adjusted when you need to, yes?
Yeah, I got a call from Dan Torres the other day. He wanted to know before they went and did anything about the PSA law. He had three questions about three different things they were doing. And as we went over it, one didn't cost any money. One was definitely not a public service announcement. I forget what the other one was. None of them violated our PSA policy. If it did, the only thing that would have happened was at that point we have a discussion. Is this what we intended it to do? If not, we can amend. If it is what we intended to do, then we ask that they don't do it anymore. But beyond that, so it's not like it's going to stop traffic. I've heard some different things. I talked to Tracy today about directories. I talked to Vicky again. We still feel as though the existing wording that we have, the last whereas, covers directories and the office, the signage around your office and things like that. But I will say that anything that comes, this has been done in a lot of places. I'll remind Ken that he said the time to do it is when a new executive is coming in. A couple of friends of mine from DPW today said that they were hanging an Adele Ryder sign at the DSS building a little while ago, which is going to be grandfathered in, so no worries there. We also have grandfathered in. We're not going to be taking any signs down. Those DPW guys told me they've been running around taking old signs down and putting new ones up. It'll avoid all that. I just don't see, I see more pros than cons, and I just don't see any situation where, we're not going to be fining people or suspending them over this. Nobody's going to get in trouble. We amend it if we come across an unintended circumstance. But I feel as though the worries that I've heard are covered within the way the law is written, which I don't have printed out from.
So I was raising some concerns. Joe and I talked about them. Can I maybe suggest to what I think are friendly amendments based on our conversation? So in the first resolved, it says that it's the policy of Ulster County that, because you don't have it in front of you, said, that on or after the effective date thereof, no county elected official shall appear by likeness, blah, 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 blah. So can we change that to no current county elected official? Because that's your intention. You're talking about people, current elected officials, not putting their name on everything, right?
Yes.
So can you say no current county elected official?
Yeah, I'd be fine with that. I don't feel like that's...
Because, again, if you're putting something as a memorializing, it would prohibit that, potentially?
Yeah.
If it doesn't say
current. That will cover the donating of a bridge to a former
county. Or dedicating.
Dedicating.
Exactly. Well, I think the Westchester example, that their county building is dedicated to a former
county
Okay, so
all right, so the change is the no current.
No current county.
Do you accept
official?
That as a friendly change?
Update.
Yes.
The word current is ambiguous.
Okay, so what's a good word?
Why is it ambiguous?
Because is it current when the application when 5 years from now when it happens, or current when the law is written? This law is going to be
currently serving.
Sitting.
Sitting, current serving, incumbent.
You use a lot of different, but I I don't see a problem.
Well, that's why
I don't see a problem, but it's easy to go change to.
That's my suggestion.
Yeah, change the word. I appreciate it. Sounds good to me. City.
I agree, what's
more legal, Nick and David? What's more legal?
I think the Westchester law just specifically exempts memorials.
Yeah, that,
but
so we could just put in
if,
that
if you want to look at the executive order that they did. I don't think they use current. But,
okay, so we could then put it in the second result. We could exempt memorials. Then whatever you want to do. My other suggestion is in the second resolved, it says, resolved that this policy shall not apply to the appearance of an elected official's name and or likeness on his or her office or his or her official webpage or in the county directory.
In any county directory.
Can we just change it to any county directory,
sure.
Lower C, lower D, so that that sign outside that is a county directory for our conversation, it wouldn't include that.
And the one downstairs?
Yeah, yep. It wouldn't, because yep. It's a so. Again, any county directory.
And let's decide right now how we're going to do it. Are we just going to cut and paste the exemption or the memorial or
the incumbent piece right now is the easier cut, but is the more
accurate? A memorial might be more accurate.
No, but and that's kind of like where I'm just going. I apologize for jumping, Mr. Chair. But I mean, like, which is the better?
I think currently serving, because memorials is only going to, you know, is only going to cover something after they've died. Sometimes people are honored with a bridge or something else
memorial
while they're still alive.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, the hand dryers are still dedicated to Mike Hyde.
They're dedicated?
So is that a lavatory?
But they're not dedicated.
Is that a lavatory?
It says brought to you by. Yeah,
right,
so
that's not a dedicated.
Is it really?
It does.
Yeah, it
I
does.
Have a picture of it on my phone.
Too.
Jesus Christ.
It's no longer donated.
Although the wall outside of the county executive's office was changed to Pat Ryan's name before he took office, too. So.
Yeah, but he's no longer an elected official, so, yeah.
No, it's a memorial hand dryer?
Well, that the hand dryers are grandfathered in. So
okay.
they can stay.
Pre-existing.
Yeah.
Pre-existing.
And then it becomes a memorial.
So stay
because
on
he's
there?
Not here anymore, so he's covered twice over.
He can, unless we want to remove the sign.
Everyone.
In which case, we can remove
like
the sign.
But our hand dryers.
Leave the signs up.
But wait, is it just the hand dryers,
no,
or are there other paraphernalia?
I mean,
in bathrooms.
If they bring back paper towels, I'll dedicate them to Mr. Ryan.
Don't take out the toilet paper.
This is getting a little punchy, but yeah.
But,
all right, so what's your, what's the, all right, look at that. I'm letting this get a little
decide.
Too loose here. So what's the flavor here we want to pull off there? The memorial or just current? Go ahead.
That's current.
I move that we amend Resolution 281 to read that the policy of Ulster County that on or after the effective date hereof, no currently serving county elected official shall appear by likeness, etc., etc.
And the other one that I asked
yeah,
for.
Yeah,
and the other one, and the other one that she asked for, which changes the county directory to any county directory.
Would that
and it could be
cover
lower
memorial?
Cases?
Like a
it would, because unless somebody gets honored with a memorial while they're still serving,
yeah.
No,
which
no,
is unlikely.
Saying, yeah, but somebody
yeah,
could
right.
read the thing by saying that no current. So in other words, we'll use.
Chris Allen.
Currently serving.
Yeah, currently serving. We'll use Pat right now. Pat
oh,
Ryan. In other words, he's currently serving, correct?
Right, correct.
Correct.
So what happens later on and just say we want to honor him?
We can put a... We can
is he still county executive?
But he's currently serving now when the law is written, passed.
Oh.
I mean,
no.
Have you read that right?
I don't think so, Nick.
No, I mean, I think that was the observation.
Yeah,
right?
Of the other one. The,
yeah, I'm not
just
sure.
Using the word current could...
Because
well,
you're placing...
Currently
the,
serving is marginally
but
better than current.
It's the context.
Incumbent.
Go incumbent.
Incumbent
right.
would be clean it up.
Okay.
Does incumbent make it better?
I think it's six, one, half a dozen the other, but I really
yeah,
don't care.
I'm okay with
I'm
way.
Okay with currently serving.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, then we'll do that.
And it's
currently
the, what
serving.
Goes along with that in the sentence. That
no currently
that
serving
county
elected
official. Right. Right.
Not, you can't take it out without having it together.
I mean, for some reason, between now and tomorrow, the memorial language is so much better than bring it to
yeah,
we'll
I mean,
amend
it,
on the floor.
That's an exception. That's my recollection is the Westchester executive order and or policy.
And the law, yeah.
Well, I mean, you could put that
right
in parentheses after, could you?
Right
could you put this
there
in parentheses after the first whereas?
Memorials for
yeah.
The former
could you put it in parentheses after the first whereas or part of the first whereas? I mean, not whereas. It resolved as saying that this does not apply to Memorial.
I think that we're really
I feel like we're
thinking
this.
I think we got it. I think we got it.
I do too.
All right. Currently serving.
So your amendment seconded.
And the other
amendment. My amendment with currently serving and changing the county directory to any county directory.
All right. All those in favor of those
section.
Two amendments.
Aye. Second, Hector.
Hector.
We have one amendment on the currently serving. The other amendment is any county directory. Right?
Yep.
All right, so I think they're friendly amendments. We can move right on. Do we need to vote on them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, we'll vote on them.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. There. Good. Let's move.
All aye.
Okay.
All right, now on the resolution.
As amended.
As amended.
Aye.
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 Who's opposed? None.
Maybe tomorrow.
Yeah, we got to talk about it in caucus, but I'll move it to the floor. That's where I'm at.
That's not a good thing, Mike.
All right, the proposed ethics county law, the county ethics.
I'll move it for discussion.
All right.
One second.
And you guys were going to discuss this.
We did. Can I bring the committee through a? I don't want to say a clinic, but it's not the right not the right way to put it. But just, I mean, let's just go through the law, and we'll discuss the things that Legislator Bartels and I discussed. Everybody should have in their packet or their OneDrive a copy of the ethics law that was track change that had track changes on it from the chairwoman, and then some comments from some informal comments from the minority counsel on the track changes sections. Legislator Chairwoman Bartels and I went through the law on Thursday?
Thursday.
All the days blend together anymore. And we had some that were sort of like a no-brainer, no big deal, and then some that we wanted to bring to the committee, and then some where we needed a little bit of extra, investigation. So on page 2 of the local law, it was agreed that we would just leave the definition of child as is, because unemancipated child is used elsewhere throughout the law, and this is a generally accepted term for what a child is. Then on page 3, we have gift and the definition of gift, and we were going to leave financial benefit in, right?
I think we were going to take financial benefit out.
All right. So, I didn't have a note next to that on what we decided, so.
I think we had been between going with this new definition.
Yeah.
Or going.
Including the financial.
Or keeping the financial benefit.
So we decided that, Nick actually got this definition straight from the Internal Revenue Service. It's a good definition of a gift. So we're going to replace the definition of gift and financial benefit with this definition of gift. If it should please the committee. Is there anybody who would have a problem with that?
No.
All right.
No problem with it.
There were on page 5. On page 5.
What's that? Nick's notes?
You have this with Nick's notes? Or
no,
you want to raise this?
No, I don't think so.
Are they in the packet?
Okay.
Yeah, like
Before we go to page 5,
yes, sir.
Page 4 real quick.
Yeah. Yes.
Under M, local elected official, at least in this version, it looks like county executive, district attorney, county clerk, sheriff, and legislators. Did y'all forget comptroller?
Yeah.
Oh, it appears that we did.
Mm.
They don't have one in Orange County.
Mm. Oh, so.
Well done, Hector.
I'm going to resist everything I want to say right now. I'm going to shut up. Page 5.
All right, so on page 4, we will add the comptroller to that. Good catch, Hector.
I was just going to say something.
Because we've all been through this several times. It's great to have fresh eyes. I appreciate it. I appreciate you. I'm in a good mood today.
All right.
Page 5, we have... relative or immediate family member, we have the word relative struck through and eliminated, and everyone was fine with that.
Yeah, it's redundant.
And then
and too broad.
And then, yeah, and yeah, and it's too broad when discussed in a household. So,
we're what they say we're only all of us are only 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah.
So,
now unemancipated child, we had agreed to eliminate the under the age of 18, and add. And this is what, this is the newest thing, Trace, so just follow the thought process. Originally, we had, you know, and claimed on your state income taxes as a dependent. We're changing, I hope, to be changing that to is claimed or could be claimed by law as a dependent on your state income taxes. And then that covers in a case where you have domestic partners where they filed taxes separately and one of the partners claims a child and the other one doesn't. Mm. The other one then being a county-wide elected official or county elected official.
Sure.
Or employee of the county.
Yeah, I'm not sure that, again, we could, I realize I'm being highly technical, but I'm not sure that domestic partners who don't share legal, parental, you know, do whatever, who custody. Aren't the parents, custody, can claim. But I don't know if we want to include that. Like, let's say I lived with someone who wasn't the father of my child, and I wasn't married, but we were together. Would you want that person to... that?
Well, that person could claim if he supports.
No. Overthinking it.
Okay.
I just...
Well, are they living in the household with you?
Yeah.
It's covered.
Yeah. Okay.
Right, but it, well, no, but even it also says living in the household, so you can say and or. True, you want to make it disjunctive.
Okay.
Member of household. Right.
Okay.
I think that would be better.
Okay, and then you and could be claimed or legally claimed for the other circumstances that we discussed.
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine.
So would you then put Nick and or? Claimed or are claimed or could be claimed?
Right. Means any son, stepdaughter of a county officer or employee who strike under the age of 18, unmarried and living in the household of a reporting individual. That we're adding to that is or could be claimed on the state income tax returns of the reporting individual as a dependent. So
right. So it becomes almost a catch-all.
Make it or.
Or.
Right. So you could say and or just or.
Make or. Yeah.
Like make it disjunctive.
Mm-hmm. All right. I'm fine with or.
So after, so then just a comment, or...
You got that.
Claimed, right?
Yep. Claimed or could be claimed on state income taxes of the reporting individual as a dependent.
And I just realized something, which I'm just going to bring up. We don't have to stop discussion over this, but I realize that we're not being very forward in terms of our gender inclusion in the way we're wording this. But how we deal with that, I don't know. But we're definitely only in the male-female realm.
Could say any child and leave out those gender...
It goes all throughout sibling. I'm just saying, I don't know if we want to start being forward-thinking, but whatever.
No, I know. It's like, I mean, I think part of this is Ken's source material.
Well, part of it is that law hasn't... The legal definitions of these things have not caught up.
That's the second point I was making.
That's why I'm just bringing... I'm just raising it because I hadn't thought of it before.
Yeah.
But now
I mean,
I'm looking at it.
I would keep it to the generally accepted legal definitions at this time, at which point when the legal definitions catch up to current society, we would then change it then, I think.
Yeah.
I'm good with that.
I would urge that we say any child or stepchild, because I think that adding the gendered forms mm-hmm. doesn't give you any benefit.
Just like sibling could be any sibling or step-sibling, half-sibling
yes.
or step-sibling.
Yes. So why not use a gender-neutral or gender-inclusive
term? You can shorten it up. You can shorten it up.
And it shortens it up.
I think it's not a bad idea. I don't think we need to get stuck on it. If we can agree, and then we can make the changes this evening. Oh, or
Here's what I would say. I've received as much assurance from the county executive's office that this is not going to require a referendum. I have no problem going through with, you know, council and staff and doing our best to make it gender neutral throughout.
Yeah.
But it's going to take another month, which is okay with me. I'm not putting that up as a roadblock because I think we should do it right. But I mean, it's going to take a lot more than just going through it tonight.
Right, it's
because
not just one paragraph.
It's going to be permeated. There are going to be other. It is permeated with.
Right, but it's a search and replace.
Yeah, I think it is a search.
It, not really, because it's not just son, daughter.
I just
want stepson, stepdaughter. You're also going to be dealing with
he or she.
He's and she's and all other all over the place.
It's all
so
right,
I mean. It's a discussion we can have at the end once we get through all the comments.
Yeah.
It's not something I'm opposed to.
Yeah. I was going to say,
but I think it is a way we should start thinking. Yeah.
We could do the easy ones.
All right. Yeah. Jay, do you have the language that's been agreed upon for this paragraph now?
I do.
Okay. There's also just in my copy, there's like a straight two after election law.
Where are you seeing
in
that?
Subdivision P on the same page.
Oh,
political party.
I see it.
The straight two, I see it.
Where are you?
It's just a typo.
Yeah.
Subsection P on the top of page 5, after New York State election law period, there's an extraneous two.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. We just crossed that out.
Yeah.
There is a lot of gender neutral already in, like relative family member. Oh, and I see relative in prospective employer. We probably want to strike because we struck you might want to do a search for relative, Jay. Since we're striking relative. I don't know if that applies.
Where do you see it, Trace? What page?
I just saw on the same page.
And replace it with immediate family member and member of household?
Slash immediate family member.
I see it.
See?
With session tomorrow, I really think that we're going to want one more month to just go through and make sure we dot all the I's and cross all the T's.
Yeah.
Remind me again, why are we striking out relative? Just quickly.
It's too broad, is the argument.
Because someone could be like your third cousin, you didn't
or
know.
Twice removed,
cousin,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. We're just talking about immediate family.
Twice removed, really. And that. Then technically they'd be your first cousin.
Yeah.
To be within, technical. 6 degrees in the tables of consanguinity.
Yeah. It might be the cousin I didn't want.
Did you just try to go and class it up? Really? All right, moving on.
Onward. So the next item that we had was
too much credit.
Page 7, where it talks about residency and eligibility requirements. In the meeting that Tracy and I had, we had determined that no county official should be barred from service on the county ethics board while they're county officials. Right now, under the law as it's written, they could potentially be ethics board members, but I think that you shouldn't have membership from the subdivision that you're serving with and overseeing be serving on the ethics board. That was the argument.
Which would also, but I,
but we,
I also
we wanted
said
this for
even
committee.
Employees. Like, I don't know
right.
if we want employees.
Well,
no,
yeah,
yeah.
But county official includes employees.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, sorry. Yeah, no, I'm just,
what about former legislators?
Well, there's
no prohibition of that.
No, but what if you're, but what if you're already serving in a different capacity? Like, you know, I'm not trying to...
Such as?
A councilman?
I'm trying to be kind about this. What if somebody was on the board of SUNY Ulster and also on the ethics board?
Some boards do require that you're on other boards.
Yeah,
we in fact require that for a couple of different appointments.
So. I don't know that there's a conflict between...
No, I mean, I'm bringing it up only because, you know, if you're going, this is almost a kind of like, you know, in for a penny, in for a pound, you know what I mean?
I mean,
like,
but if you're not on the other board, does that mean you can't be on the board of a local bank and be on the board of...
No, I'm thinking more about
the
official,
you're not connected
like,
to the county.
Connected to the
county.
Neither is the College Board of Trustees. We don't vote on that.
Yeah, we don't vote on that, but, you know, there is a big difference.
But
we are tied to that.
The county, in the more expansive sense of the county, does make appointments, though, to that board.
So then what if you're on the board of Community Action or the board of Family of Woodstock, which has business with the county?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, how far are we gonna make people ineligible for this? Eventually there's only gonna be five people eligible.
I don't think we
I understand.
I'm
just saying, in other words, what he brought up was the college, which is, you know, I mean, we are tied, you know, the college is Ulster County.
Well, he asked for an example. That's the only reason why I'm not trying to go and bring up any particular.
I understand.
In a general sense of, like, there are things that are affiliated with this county in which we do have a role. You brought up community action, which we actually do make an appointment to, so that seems kind of valid. We don't make any appointments to Family of Woodstock, even though they actually have, you know, business. I'm thinking more specifically anything that
we
are directly, you know, more or less directly,
we directly
elected,
appoint
right?
People.
You know, yep. I mean, that we make an appointment to, or that an office holder here maybe makes an appointment to, that we to sort of at least not have that part of the, you know.
Okay.
Cornell Cooperative Count.
Yeah.
I mean, technically, because we make
a lot
one appointment
of board,
to that board,
a lot
right?
Of boards. Soil and Water.
But you could allow.
Ulster Prevention Council.
Go ahead.
You could allow the appointment, but have the person recuse themselves if anything pertaining to that connection comes up.
I mean, they have the option of recusal already. I mean,
right,
we don't need to write that into the law.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, look. I mean, it was our thought that county officials shouldn't serve, but there's nothing that says if the committee thinks that county officials should be able to serve that we just leave it broad.
Go ahead, Tracy.
Yeah, I mean, I really think county officials and county employees should not serve. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm open to discussion, but I'm not sure what the appointment, the fact if you were appointed to something else, what that would, like, where's your...
Well, my thinking is that depending upon the circumstance, number one, if we're just saying no county official at this point, I'm just sort of broadening that term to basically sort of include things that we appoint or that office holders here make appointment to, because there's a connection point at that point back to the county government itself. The same way that an office holder would have that same,
which is worse under the existing law. And you have a little more separation with different people choosing board members, so you're a little less susceptible to
what
you're watching.
I'd like Tracy to clarify exactly why you feel strongly about it, and then once we get the reason for it, we'll be able to figure out whether it should apply to this board or that board or not.
Why I feel strongly about employees and
officials. Why? Explain the
because
set of
that's
people
the very group of... I mean, this ethics board is going to be called to weigh in on issues of ethics and violations of this law as it applies to employees and elected officials. So we don't want...
So in other words, you don't want people making decisions that apply to their friends, their employees,
their coworkers,
their subordinates.
Their supervisors, right. Their subordinates.
People in the same office.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I could just shed, like a little bit of light on the note that I entered into the comments, which refers to state law, right? So under state law, counties and cities and other local governments are dealt with under separate paragraphs, right? So under the paragraph dealing with local boards of ethics for cities, for example, a member of a city council must be on the board of ethics. So Mount Vernon came up and said, we don't like that idea because it's not a truly independent board. If I'm a city employee, I'm going to be really reluctant to go make a complaint, say, about one of my supervisors when they're sitting on the board. So the AG opinion that I refer to there, they said, okay, Mount Vernon, you want a truly independent board, you can vary from state law, you don't have to have a city council member on there. I think with respect to counties, it's permissive. I don't think you're required to have a legislator on, but you're permitted to.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, do you want to vary from the state law and say you are not permitted to have a legislator serve?
And our current policy or law prohibits service, doesn't it?
Had any part in a campaign under the fifth qualification of a county campaign, so I don't know how you'd be a legislator without participating in a campaign. Legislators.
Ooh, you could be an appointed legislator.
I don't know.
No.
The only prohibition here in this draft law is you can't be an officer in a party.
Yeah.
That's it.
Well, I think I agree with the employee or elected officials. I don't think they should
that
be serving on there.
Yeah.
I think that should be prohibited. I agree with the concept of it.
Elected officials and employees.
Yeah.
So you should say shall at the same time, like it's because you want to prohibit dual.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the point was to keep it out of the office, basically.
Yep.
The person in the same office.
Yeah, it's meant to be an independent body, so totally independent. And that's the whole purpose of changing it around because of the way the appointments were taking place. It
so
doesn't seem to be independent. Yes.
Jay, just for syntax,
mm-hmm.
if you're looking at Section 5A, subparagraph 2, the last sentence, no member shall, and then I would add in at the same time, hold the office of county legislator, and then you can add in, or any elected, I guess, any elected office.
Shall serve in any elected office or be an employee of the county of
Ulster. Or, and then you go into the party affiliations. Yep. That are
what's with the at the same time? Because then it sounds like you're saying
at the same time as they're serving.
But it's not, because it sounds like you're saying at the same time as you're elected, you're a party official.
It's going to be period, and then start with no legislator shall at the same time serve on the board of ethics.
No elected
and,
official.
No elected official or county employee shall serve.
Right.
Yeah, you're no longer a county employee or elected official once you're not a county employee or elected.
Yeah,
official.
Yeah,
I
was
going to
leave
like
at the same time out, then
you know,
just add
yeah,
those in.
I mean, I don't think you have to say at the same time. For the 4 years I wasn't an elected official, I wasn't an elected official.
You could have served.
But I was not an elected official.
Right.
I had been, but so
just
it's a common legal term to use extra words. So.
No member shall hold the office, and then you could say of the various party offices, comma or any elected Ulster County office or being an employee of the county.
We'll just make it its own sentence.
Yeah, Jay's got
That's
it.
Right. Jay's got it. Jay will take care of
it. I'm trying to help Jay through it, but Jay's got it is easier, so.
No, she does it.
Not this time, I don't.
Let me see.
No, I had at the same time hold elected office, but you've 86
you
vet theory.
You 86
so then
that.
It was hold the office of chair, blah, 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 party stuff, or elected office or serve as an employee.
Yeah, elected or, right. Any employee or an elected official.
Yeah,
yeah,
sounds good to me.
Any employee or elected
we have
official.
Now we have time to
are we saying county elected office or any elected office? What are you suggesting?
I would suggest county elected
county
office.
County elected office.
Okay.
This way, I mean, if somebody's a dog catcher and they're elected to the position and they want to serve, I
right.
mean...
Do we elect dog catchers anywhere in Ulster County anymore?
I don't know if we do.
We appoint them. In Sandakin.
What?
Do you guys know?
There's a place in
no.
New York that elects them, I think. This is a trivia question.
Malone. No.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, you could be you could be elected to, you know, like,
town board?
A fire
commissioner.
Commissioner.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Right, but the intention here is to...
Or police commissioner.
Yes.
Can I say, just because I hadn't been cross-referencing this, I was looking, when I made my notes, I was really looking at this standalone. I just want to point out a couple things in our... Current, our current Board of Ethics, the members are required to reside in Ulster County, be over 25 years of age, and be registered voters for at least 5 years prior to appointment. Do we want to consider any aspect of that? I mean, I certainly think they should reside in Ulster County.
And we have that in ours already.
That's in
yes.
ours currently,
yes.
Yeah.
It's in this one,
No, it's
too.
In the new one, too.
Where?
Residency all members of the Board of Ethics shall reside in the County of Ulster and be eligible to register to vote in Ulster County.
Where
it doesn't require them to be registered.
Well, you can
to
be
vote.
Unregistered.
5A2.
Under.
Literally
Board
the section we're talking
members.
About.
Oh, A2.
Yeah.
A2. Okay,
A2.
I see. Okay.
First paragraph.
Okay.
First sentence.
All right, that's fine.
Yeah,
are 25, they don't have to be 25.
Yeah, I don't see
we're
a
on
reason for the age restriction. Could I ask a question about the preceding section where there was a question and then an answer? The question was, what if the executive refuses to appoint those nominated by the legislative members, and the answer is litigate it? Would it be reasonable to think about if this appointment by the executive is to be meaningful, that if there's a slate nominated and the executive refuses that there would be a process where there would be a second slate?
Because then it's the executive deciding who he's appointing. The executive could just continue to not appoint people until the legislature brings up a slate that he or she finds acceptable. That's, you know, that's why you'd litigate it. I mean, in Orange County right now, the way I understand it, they're operating with a board of six because the three from the executive and the three from the legislature could not come up with a seventh. And that's just, you know, a function of, you know, growing pains. I think that under this law, the legislature would have to enter into litigation if the executive refused to appoint the ones that were recommended by the legislator, by the named legislators. And then, you know, he would, you know, the judge would, I imagine, be likely to force the executive to make the appointment. So the law says he has to.
Why don't you just have it that we appoint instead of nominate?
The whole reason of the nomination is it complies with general municipal law.
Right. It's a...
The chief executive officer of the county under New York State county law appoints members of the Board of Ethics. This is a way to be able to diversify the appointment of these individuals without violating the law.
That's why...
Okay, I think if it's on the same subject, you want to...
Well, just that's why I think it's not a slam dunk that you would win and the judge would force the executive to appoint, because it's in general municipal law.
Well, nothing's a slam dunk.
Yeah.
When it comes to that. Trace.
But, I mean...
Okay, so, again, just cross-referencing with the current, it appears that in our current legislation, you can be... you can work for the county, but you can't hold an elective office. But I think it's important to point out, you can't hold any elective office. So we couldn't appoint a town supervisor. But the way we're writing it, we could. So we might want to. We should probably have a discussion about whether.
I'd be leery of a town supervisor on
so
there.
Maybe,
anyway,
so
myself.
The language
I mean, I
that we currently
deal with
have.
In other words,
we still confirm all the appointments, so we could decide that we don't want to confirm.
But do we want anyone? I mean, I think if we're keeping people who aren't in political parties, we don't want people holding elective office in the county. Period. Like not just county office. That makes sense to me.
Well,
but
what about a fire commissioner?
Well, okay, that's a good point. Right now,
I mean, do you want to push past this, and we can put a pin in it since we're going to be waiting a month anyway, and we can all think about how
and
we feel about it. I'm ambivalent. So.
Okay,
I really want to get this done next month.
Yes,
me too.
Well, we're getting really close, I think.
Okay.
Can I say one other thing though? That is, currently you can't hold any office, any political office, and that would include committee person or committee member.
Mm-hmm.
So this doesn't include. It's just chair.
This doesn't even include town committees. This is county committees
so
and state
we,
committees.
So can we
federal
put a
committees.
Pin in that and think about that?
Yeah.
Because again, I think we're trying to remove politics
right,
from
so
this and be
put it
aside
so on that. We need to just think about that and come up with that, Joe.
Just in the existing law, I think there was a. Under the qualifications, I think the last qualification was you cannot have a part, no member of the Board of Ethics can be a part of any county political committee. They say you can donate, obviously.
Yeah. That's in the new one, too.
Oh, I don't see
the
it.
The county political committee.
I don't see it.
It says...
it's under two.
Which
where
means you're, if you're a town committeeman, you're in the county committee.
Wait. What the?
No, but you're not the chair, vice chair, second vice chair, secretary, or treasurer of the county committee just because you're in a town committee. That's what I'm saying. We need to put a pin in that. And I think you shouldn't be in any political.
No, be part of a political campaign, county political campaign.
Who ejects?
I thought that was in the first law.
It is in the first law. It says that.
Under.
It is.
Qualifications.
Yep, I'm looking really quick. Says you can give money, but
you cannot be take part.
A member may make campaign contributions, but not otherwise participate in any Ulster County election campaign.
Either way, would that be making a speech in behalf of someone?
Nominating at a county convention, making a speech,
knocking on your neighbor's door, about it at Stewart's. I mean,
a documented. I mean, I don't think they should take part in any county campaign if they're going to be deciding on ethics charges.
Right.
I like that in our original law.
As that's written, it wouldn't allow
that's
you
a
to vote.
That's a free exercise concern, I think. Yeah.
The problem is this is retroactive, too. I mean, it's not just qualifications for appointment. It's unless I'm reading it wrong.
Read the exact wording.
Residency and eligibility requirements.
Do you want me to read you what I just read? That's what you're saying.
You're going to get people who are serving on the ethics board and then decide that they want to go out and help somebody putting lawn signs in and you know, this this is going to function retroactively, too.
Yeah, they would have to
Well,
except,
I mean, what currently, this is our current law, says a member may make campaign contributions but not otherwise participate in any Ulster County election.
They can't be making phone calls.
If I can't get on a soapbox and oppose his
Is this a legal opinion or a legislative opinion?
Legislative. Right. I haven't researched the law, but...
I don't think we need to hear from that.
I would like the attorneys to research the legality of that before we move forward with it, though, because it sounds to be a free exercise concern, even in our current law.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, the problem is if you're doing that and then you're on the ethics board, and what do you do when an ethics violation comes up of reference to the person that...
You recuse yourself.
You're supposed to, but that didn't happen in the last one.
We've seen.
I mean, there's a process to remove board members. Oh yes,
Hector.
There's
a reason. Legislator Rodriguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So, I guess through the chair, just to let's say to Ronk.
Yes, sir.
I mean, so there's a couple of the things. I guess the other things you may want to just discuss, but I guess just to sort of just jump ahead a bit. What's our process to go and deal with the, meaning once this law is effective, are we then reappointing or making new appointments at that point to the Board of Ethics?
It would be a whole new board.
Okay. Yes. No. I just want to make sure.
After the effective date.
Yeah, after the effective date. I'm saying, but when it's passed, or what the effective date is when again?
I believe it actually says January, isn't it, Nick?
Oh, you can decide to reappoint.
I mean, it's later on.
Yeah.
Effective date, local law should take effect upon filing with the Secretary of State.
I mean, the county executive may pick three of the people that are on there. We may pick a couple of them that are on there already. I mean, it's, you know, it's really the choice of whatever happens there.
Well, right now they serve to a term of years.
Right.
But does that end? Do they continue on?
Yeah, so, wait, I'm sorry, can I be...
Go ahead. Brief?
So, correct me if I'm wrong, but currently they serve for a term of years.
Yes, this would not. They would serve at the pleasure. They serve for a term of years, but can be removed by for cause.
So currently you have a Board of Ethics, and they're serving for a term, a fixed term, right? So if you go to page 6, section 4, I think what it provides for is that they continue until the expiration of that term.
That's what it
and then
like
they're
here.
Reappointed as they expire. So we're changing.
Okay, so all right, so I misread that then.
Now, wait a minute. Let me get something clear here. Are we changing that? In other words, I prefer to keep term of years.
Well, that's a whole separate question.
It's in here somewhere.
No, but do we, the question is, when this law is voted upon and it passes, does it just kind of start when the next term is up?
No.
Continuation of the Board of Ethics and authority thereof. The existing Board of Ethics provided for in said pre-existing Charter Administrative Code and Code Sections of the County of Ulster is hereby continued, reconstituted, and the terms of members of such Board of Ethics shall continue uninterrupted until expiration as provided for by pre-existing Charter Administrative Code, Code and Code Sections of the County of Ulster. The board shall solely be empowered to make determination on or decision previously permitted for action, blah, 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 blah. So, it continues, and then they're replaced properly.
Yeah, exactly. So if board member A expires in, say...
I thought we were just starting fresh.
You could.
Well, I guess the problem with that is if you had pending matters in front of them, you're just saying, you know, you're done, and then new people will come in, which is fine. But that's not how this is written.
I would like to consider that possibility. Again, we can put a pin in that with this month. I mean, if we have the lead time, if we're passing this with the lead time, I would like to consider the possibility of being ready with the appointments to start fresh. If we're going to reappoint people who are currently seated, then we can find out when the terms are, Jay?
The present ones, so we can find out when the terms end.
We can.
I mean, I think everybody should be appointed to a term, not to a to the pleasure of.
Yeah, I don't think they have terms.
Not the new ones, no.
No, the old ones. I mean,
the old ones have terms. That was a charter change in 2012.
That was a change that I actually put forth.
The new ones have 3-year terms. What do you mean? It says staggered 3-year terms.
there's terms, but there's still pleasure of. The same way that, technically speaking, when we appoint IDA board members, for example, right, they were appointed to, for a two-year term, but it's not really a two-year term. It's at the pleasure of any one of them to be removed.
This says the members of the, our new law. Our new law says the members of the Board of Ethics shall serve set staggered 3-year terms.
Yeah, isn't it somewhere in here, the staggering?
Are you reading the new law or the old
law? I'm reading the new one.
The new one, it does.
All right, then it does what I want.
Yeah, okay, I thought you were making it at the pleasure of.
No, they don't serve at the pleasure of, but later on there is a process for removal.
Okay.
Yeah, they serve for 3-year terms, right, but they can be removed.
At the expiration of the term of office of any member of the Board of Ethics, said member shall continue to serve until reappointed or replaced by a new member. So there's a holdover clause, but they served a 3-year staggered term.
So it has a continuity of office, basically. Go, Nick.
Can I just ask, just for administrative convenience, if there were a couple of pins dropped. I don't know, Jay, if you're dropping those pins.
Yeah, I was just going to ask that, too.
Okay. I have them as well.
Okay, just so we revisit them.
Yeah.
We've dropped the pins in page 7. I think we've sufficiently dropped pins in page 7 and 6 now.
In the current one, I don't see the terms. I'm looking at them.
It's in there.
It's in there. Let's go to the next thing anyway.
She's in charge.
After they shall be served at the pleasure of the county executive and may be removed at his discretion.
But I think it was not updated, but it was changed.
Definitely. I'm looking at the charter. It just says at pleasure.
I'm telling you, it was changed.
Wasn't it changed by...
It was us. It was this committee when you were chairman.
Yeah,
or you were chairman. Someone was chairman.
I'm the one that put it in.
Jay, can you
I think we did it together.
Yeah. Yeah, because we felt that it was... Yeah, you can't do that.
Yeah, I literally did Washington.
Yeah.
Because I felt it was totally wrong that, you know, you can't, serving at the pleasure means, you know...
Right, he could, a county executive could vacate the whole ethics board if they disagree with him.
I remember this.
Yeah. But. All right, so if we could move on to page 8.
Yep,
folks.
8.
Page 8 in the area of removal of board members. The board members can be removed from cause by the county executive under this. Legislator Bartels and I said, or by 3/5 vote of the legislature.
3/5?
More than 2/3.
What's 3/5 of 23?
It's less than 2/3.
Less than
2/3.
Maybe I meant 4/5. Sorry. I was thinking of...
We definitely didn't say 4/5.
We didn't, but I was thinking about it as more than 2/3.
No, it's 60%.
I'm not a math
proficient.
14. You would need 14 votes.
0.6667.
For removal.
Yeah. Right. So is that what you want, or do you want 2/3? Because we're using supermajority.
I'm gonna go 2/3.
That's what I was using as supermajority.
So and it would make it consistent throughout as well. With other areas where we need
to
go.
I mean,
the demographics are going. Yeah, I know, but when he said 3/5, I was like,
3/5.
Why? Weird. I never heard Democrats.
Not necessarily.
Don't bring up 3/5 compromise.
Exactly.
Good.
That's another point. Okay. That's Dave Donaldson, folks.
It's a little scary. On that note,
scarier for other people.
Yeah, the Civil War.
What?
Is it number 5 going backwards? We're allowing a county executive to remove it for cause?
Yeah.
For cause.
What's cause?
Gross incompetence, illegalities.
In the opinion of
one person? Is that right?
Yeah, I'm not really loving that either.
Yeah, that's got to be removed.
Let's put a pin in it.
And he could remove one of his two people or
anybody.
Well, that's insanity.
It says anyone for cause. They get a hearing before a neutral officer.
On the removal ballot.
Who would a neutral officer be?
It doesn't say that. We provide an opportunity.
He's deputy.
I got to say.
It says we provide them. It says by the Ulster County Legislature.
I originally
the legislature provides the neutral.
Ken.
So I originally flagged it because I saw that it was the executive only who could remove, and I said, where's the balance if the exec can remove? But now that we're all discussing it, I really think that the legislature has a final approval on all the appointments, so it really probably should be a supermajority of the legislature in terms of removal. The exec can recommend removal, and then the legislature would have a supermajority of... To remove. I mean, the idea of an exec just being able to remove for cause is that's a tremendous amount of
power. Yeah, it goes against the way we attempted to do before.
You're right.
So
what
we
do you
can
think,
put a pin in it.
I'm ambivalent. Whatever the committee wants.
Do you guys just want to remove that? I think Kevin's right.
I think
it should just be the legislature.
No, you make it the legislature with 2/3 vote.
Yeah, 2/3 vote,
right. Legislature by 2/3 vote can remove. I'm whatever.
They come up with somebody that's doing something.
I mean, it's
wrong.
It's
sure
not
real.
It hasn't happened
in 12 years.
So
I mean, you
know, do we want to put in expressly that the executive could recommend removal to the legislature? I mean, give the.
No, I mean he could anyway by a letter.
I think he or she would know. They could probably do that.
Okay.
Or you can turn around, make it if the executive recommends it, it's just the majority vote. Instead of a 2/3.
No majority vote. That's dangerous.
I mean, just if it was recommended by the executive.
No. 2/3 vote.
Two-thirds is more.
All right, I'm good. I mean, I just threw it out.
I want to clarify, if the legislature is going to remove on the procedure for that, because there's procedures in there, and I don't immediately understand how it's going to work. Prior to removal, the Board of Ethics member shall be given written notice of the grounds to be removed. So how does that happen?
Who's going to do it?
Yeah. But who's going to do? Who decides?
Well, the clerk of the legislature would be the one to do that.
I get that, but who decides on the grounds?
The legislature.
So you'd need a. So at the outset of all this, the legislature has to vote on the grounds for removal.
Well, you'd need a 2/3 vote of the legislature to remove, so it would likely be done by resolution.
I know, but you would actually need
the grounds would be listed in the resolution.
Sorry, not to jump in, but what you're saying is. You would almost need someone to go and determine the grounds in order to inform said person of the removal.
You need a bunch of things, and that's why I want to clarify.
You need
an accusation, so somebody's got to decide on the grounds of the accusation.
Yep.
Is it a majority vote? Is it a supermajority vote? Then the clerk can deliver the accusation. Then there's the appointment of an officer to hold an adjudicatory hearing. So all I'm saying is. Mm-hmm.
But none of that happens before the legislature votes on removal. The adjudicatory proceeding would happen afterwards.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm less worried about the legislature, quote unquote, taking a vote to decide by what grounds they are accusing someone. Insofar, I mean, like ultimately, it comes down to we need a vote or something along those lines. I almost kind of feel like would we have to go and basically by any legislator, I guess, could in fact at that point make the grounds to be submitted for a resolution because of our process. Sorry, I'm going around Joe here. Because of our process, we have resolution deadline, three weeks before we actually go and vote on anything.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, at that point, you already sort of have, at that point, the accusation, if you will. It's written in stone. It's actually by resolution.
Right.
At the same time that resolution is being submitted to the clerk duly, at that point, the clerk is then able to... Joe, stay still. So at that point, you can then inform said member because the clerk at that point is in receipt of the resolution.
Yeah, I think we're overthinking
right?
it.
I'm not worried about that first step.
Way
but no. But he still has a point though. Insofar as that there has to be a mechanism by which the board member is in fact informed, and then that would theoretically, because it would be done by resolution, it would theoretically happen at the same time. Whether that needs to be in this law is probably the other question,
okay.
Right? No. I'm saying that
sounds like an internal policy of the legislature.
Yes. Okay.
All right, next one, go ahead. Let's move on.
But we'll put a pin in it.
Yeah. Wait, can I just, for clarification, are we striking by the county executive and adding or 2/3 of the legislature, and we're just putting a pin in the recommendation by the county executive section? Is that accurate?
No recommendation. No, we were just doing it. It's the legislature, I thought.
Yeah, we would just strike
no
by the county executive.
We're putting a pin in it still.
There's
but
a pin, but we would strike by the county executive.
But,
all right, and exchange it by the Ulster County, or 2/3 vote of the Ulster County.
But there's also one other thing that's going to need to be changed in this, because under the current writing of the section, the county executive removes and the legislature chooses the impartial third party. I think that if we're the ones doing the removal, the impartial third party should be the county attorney.
I think the impartial third party is the county attorney in almost every case has to recuse because you're talking about an employee or an elected official.
Right.
So,
but they're not. But they're not choosing whether it's valid or not. They're choosing a third party. Then
the county attorney kind of works at the discretion of the executive. So in a way, you're leaving it up to the executive. Why don't we just get it? Why wouldn't we have a neutral? I mean, this is so rare that it's going to happen.
Yeah,
I think.
How are we going to hire somebody who's neutral if we're the ones making the removal, though?
Well, because
we're the deliberative body,
and you trust them to be neutral.
We are the deliberative body, so we're the ones
you're
that
saying
have
the
to
county
deliberate
attorney
on that and come
person?
Up with somebody
yeah.
who's neutral.
Because under
yeah,
this,
I feel like that's fine.
Under this, the county executive
the county attorney would
choose the impartial person.
Oh, I think yeah,
the no, no, the county attorney would not be the impartial person.
Yeah.
Because under this, the legislature is not the impartial person. The legislature chooses an impartial party to hear the appeal.
Provided by the legislature, this will be.
I just think that if we're going to change it from one branch doing one thing, we should also change the other branch doing the other thing.
Yeah.
Can I ask one more question on five?
Yeah.
Why is it even in here? We don't have this clause for any other board. Do we?
I think we need.
I mean, we don't have a clause for resource recovery, which has a $20 million budget. I'm worried about a board of ethics committee.
Well,
honestly,
maybe we should have worried about the board of ethics committee a little more. We can remove IDA members. I mean, we can remove other board members, can't we?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it's not unheard of that we're.
It's the bill of RA, though, with the
all right, well, we got this, and then let's.
That's part of a contract.
All right, so you all were good with the county attorney change?
Yeah.
I mean, the whole thing ends with
picks
but
a that neutral person.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's fair.
Okay. Page 10. We've changed supermajority to 2/3 vote.
All right. We like that. Move on.
Chairwoman Bartels was concerned on page 11 about the use of the word reasonable time frame. So what we had decided, or what I had suggested and we wanted to discuss about in committee, that such county officer or employee shall have 30 days to respond either orally in writing and shall have the right to be represented to counsel other person. The Board of Ethics shall have the authority to grant an additional 30 days at its sole discretion. Does anybody have an objection to that?
And this is just for the initial responding to the initial...
the initial notice of... default.
I would worry that without defining reasonable, a board could say, well, you know, we gave you...
5 business days.
We gave you 5 business days and we haven't heard from you. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, someone could be out of town.
Yeah.
And next thing you know, they're found guilty.
30 days with another 30 days is good.
Hector?
I nodded, I guess.
I'm good with it.
We didn't hear, okay. We didn't hear the jingle.
Right. Well, you were looking right at me.
Move on, 2/3 vote again.
The next one is 2/3 vote again.
Which is perfect. We can get continuity.
In 7, and we're going to end up having to put a pin in this, probably.
Yeah.
In 7, the board's findings and conclusions shall be made public. The question is, how will they be made public?
Yeah. Yeah.
Normally, the board decides on its own how to make things public, but Nick pointed out that as part of this law, it's already to be public. They're already to publish an annual report, mm-hmm. So we could put in there that the board shall... the board's findings, conclusions, and order shall be made public by printing in the annual report of the Board of Ethics.
I believe in our existing law, the county executive has the right to release as well.
It's given to him.
He has the right to release the media and the public, and he has discretion in doing that.
We don't have that in this one.
Yeah, we don't have that.
So that is not in this.
No.
No.
But employees should have 2 E's.
Yeah.
Oh, look at that.
What's that?
Employee should have 2 E's.
Oh.
Actually, 3, but 2 at the end.
Otherwise, it's probably an employee.
Or with a short employee.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Is anybody opposed to using the annual report of the Board of Ethics as the way in this law that we require the Board of Ethics to make their opinions
public?
But
it's filed. I mean, it's foilable also.
Of course. Everything is public. This is about being made public.
Yeah, right. I mean, I guess, you know, like this is probably my only, it's not really a concern, but I guess this is more like, and again, just take this is just comment. It's not like it's not particularly organized, but I mean, there may be instances where the board, where they may have a case in front of them where they feel like they actually do want to sort of have the findings public because it could be something, you know.
Nothing precludes the board by a vote of its membership to put out a press release.
Yeah, but the release, just requiring the details of it, though, when they do their annual report.
On the flip side, I mean, on the flip side, you may have something that is a, like, a minor issue, and whether or not, you know, the accusation itself might be, you know, hurtful to the individual. Let's go and say, I accuse Ken Ronk of, I don't know,
make it good.
I was gonna say something
good.
I was gonna say something simple about just needing a haircut.
Give him a hand, Dave. You're good at this.
But if you want, I don't know, theft. I don't know. Like let's go big, right? You know, and it's clearly you know BS, and it's not necessarily known to the public. No, I'm saying, let's go and say it's not known to the public, and yet then even by its nature, that then is that accusation. Then finds its way into the annual report. Now, yes,
findings, course, conclusions, and order.
No, and I get that. No, I mean, I get that. But then let's go and say, and again, just take this with a grain of salt, or just more matter, just to
several grains of salt.
There you go. But I'm saying, but even the hint of the accusation is still damaging to you, right? Even though, yes, it's a completely bogus BS claim, right?
Yep.
You know what I mean? So that's just where I'm just sort of. Just
I mean, nothing precludes them from doing that as a vote of the board either. But I think that
release things that are, in other words, they do not release them if they're not found.
Correct.
Guilty.
Well, that's why it says findings, conclusions, in order.
They don't even announce them. Right now, they're happening.
Well, right now
they don't.
In their annual report, they'll have a sum total of. Complaints made with the adjudication of them as being founded or unfounded and what their findings are.
I knew you were going to say something.
I just think you could use the language of at a minimum in the annual report.
All right.
And
I'll let it go.
We can have a pin in it. I don't know the answer.
You got it in the annual report. It doesn't preclude them from putting it out somewhere else.
All right. All right, so we'll move on.
I feel like findings should be provided to the direct supervisor or the department head.
Yeah.
I mean, that's in the current.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? It would be relevant if there was a finding. So.
Yep.
Who's the DA's department head?
DA is the department head. There's nobody.
So then what if it was the DA, he or she?
I imagine if the DA was found to be guilty of an ethics violation, that would be a matter that would be brought up to the Commission on Judicial Conduct as well as the State Attorney General's Office.
The executive.
Yeah.
Who's the executive's department head?
I don't know.
Of Ulster County?
Yeah, and who's the legislature's, the elected offices, I'm not sure who the department head is. But it definitely, for employees, I would want... I mean, the department head should know about a violation.
Then you should be specific and say for employees.
Yeah. Okay.
And maybe to return to Hector's point about a false accusation, let's call it, or an accusation that's not substantiated.
Unfounded.
So maybe we would exempt unfounded accusations from naming the individuals who are charged. I mean, it's unfounded. Why should their name be brought up? You'd rather have the name of the person who's bringing the charge.
Yeah, no, but that's like, I mean, that's...
Is that what you're trying to...
You know, I actually argued both sides, because, like, the way, when you're sort of just dealing with this sort of static sort of just suggestion, again, I'm not trying to say that I have the answer. I'm saying maybe in a month from now, or maybe hopefully before a month, but, you know, in the next couple of weeks, I may have something to add to this to sort of actually help refine that. But Kathy, yes, both sides of that are actually sort of problematic in my mind.
Yeah,
I think that's a good point.
You know what? Sometimes you you're not going to cover everything, no matter how you look at it. You know that. We try to, but
not going
to
bring that.
But I do think it's a good. I mean, it's a good catch that, in terms of a finding and conclusion, could find that the person is is acquitted, was not in violation. But maybe then you'd also, I don't know, what's the harm in saying we found that there is no violation?
Because you could have somebody who's either an employee of the county or in a political office or something like that, and all of a sudden, even to even have the accusation itself is problematic just to that.
Well, that'd be part of the, you know, like some, that's going to happen at some, I mean, hopefully it won't happen, but it could happen, and what's going to happen, it'll people will start to be seeing that it's like, you know, some of it may be political in nature, or in other words, that's...
I have several notes here. We'll put a pin in it.
You know, the thing is with the real problem with ethics boards in general is they can be used in that manner.
Yeah, no, I mean
people
try to use them
in that manner.
They can be politically. Yeah.
So they not everybody, but sometimes they can. You know, people use them in that manner.
All right, so we'll put a pin in that section, but I think that we have some notes on what?
We're pretty good on.
Yeah, page 15. Again, strikes the word relative several times. We then also said we were going to eliminate subsection 2 there, wherever a county officer or employee is required to recuse himself, he or she shall inform his supervisor, immediate supervisor in writing, you know, file with the Board of Elections a signed statement disclosing the nature of the extent of the conflict. I mean, you know, recusals are in a lot of cases a personal choice. I mean, you know, to put every legislator through this on every recusal, I think, is
extreme.
Thoughts?
Everyone fine with removing that? It's not in our current law.
Yeah, I'm good with removing it.
All right,
it.
So deleted. Appearances, and this is a question for the attorneys, and it may not be answered tonight. I think I brought it up to Nick briefly. Appearances, a county employee shall not appear before any agency or department of the county except on his or her own behalf or on behalf of the county or on behalf of his or her constituents in the case of an elected official or attorney, therefore. So here's the question. Say a restaurant owner is, you know, or someone who's operating a restaurant does not necessarily own the DBA. Is that the case?
That's two different.
You know, does not necessarily hold the DBA for said restaurant, but appears before the health department, as, you know, in an administrative hearing capacity. Is he or she appearing on her own behalf on that, or would she be, or he or she be violating the ethics law?
What's their position with the county?
County legislator.
What if the county legislator
works? I have two questions. So, if a county legislator, using the restaurant example, works in a managerial position for a restaurant and goes before the health board as part of their duties, are they appearing on their own behalf or are they appearing on behalf of their boss?
It's a conflict.
So they would not go. They would not go.
I would see it as a conflict.
I mean,
if they're appearing, they
the substance
would have
is
somebody
the same.
Else go.
And in fact, you're just inviting people to avoid this. I mean, to the extent that it's reasonable.
And then here's the other question. Why are you allowed to appear on behalf of your constituents? And that's why I say, arguably, the whole county.
I don't even know what that means.
That's what I don't. Either.
I mean,
that's
if a legislator were to go to an IDA public hearing
and appear on behalf of my constituents,
and appear on behalf of his or her constituents at the IDA public hearing.
That's your job.
That's why it says you can do it.
But you can appear on behalf of your constituent.
Mm-hmm. Constituents.
Yeah.
I mean, the point of this is to avoid private enrichment.
But that's
right,
what I'm saying.
Right.
So say my constituent has an application before the IDA, and I go up here on his or her behalf in making that application.
Well, are you doing it because you're representing a
But they're my constituent.
Are they a family member, or is it not?
You can represent your constituents. That's your legislative function.
I mean,
you're not making any money by it.
Because if it's not, because it could, well, if it's...
The point about representation is to not get paid, as an attorney or something like that, it's not be a paid representative.
Right.
If you're making a political choice that this is part of your job, that this voice needs your voice, that's your political choice.
Okay.
That's
because it would have been found out that you had some type of
financial
monetary ties
that's obvious.
Then you're representing yourself.
And in the case of the restaurant, if I'm appearing on behalf of my own restaurant, then I'm allowed to do it because it's my restaurant.
Right.
If I own the restaurant,
you're appearing on your
no
on your own
go
interest.
On my
yeah.
behalf,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And mm-hmm. I have to go to the health department.
Like, or even if you're the best suited.
On my behalf, yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say, if you own it, I mean, yeah, right? Like you,
that's fine.
Yeah, but you introduce yourself as the owner of the restaurant, not mm-hmm. like
correct.
Somewhere else. Yeah.
Right. I don't own a restaurant. I'm just
she's
saying.
Not
yeah. And you, don't, you also don't do, in other words, well, when you present yourself and then you can turn around and you turn yourself around and say, oh, and Legislator Bartels, I recommend that you do this.
No. Well, that's a violation
Chair
of the ethics
Bartels,
law.
If,
I want yeah, to raise a question to the committee because this is kind of a hybrid. There are times, I said you can make the legislative choice to represent mm-hmm. a constituent. In some cases, the drafters of these rules consider that to be, I mean, it's not a violation of the ethics rules because you're enriching yourself, you're making a choice, mm-hmm. but you are tipping your, you're going before some board, the IDA or whatever, and you're tipping the scale of that board's consideration using your prestige as a legislator.
Yeah.
And it's up to the drafters of this to determine whether you want to write that out or allow that. It could go either way because you're not enriching yourself, but you're using your position.
Yeah, I think that's a, you know, that's it's
something it's a function of being a legislator.
It's a function
I mean,
of being a legislator. I mean, you're right. It could be perceived as being a little shady, shall we say? I mean, if that's the case. So I think anybody that does that needs to be careful.
I think it's in the eye of the beholder.
The question is whether it
right,
is a legitimate
true.
Use of
yeah.
power.
I mean, if I go in there and I say I want to make, you know, like I might promote for the IDA to get a tax break for somebody that, in other words, in my district, because I want to make sure that these jobs that they're claiming they're going to bring. And that's so I'm going to say, yeah, I'm supporting this as a legislator from the city of Kingston. I really wanted to, but having said that, if the guy was a personal friend of mine, me doing that would be another issue.
Okay.
I mean, even though I may not get any benefit from it, but if I'm doing it because he's my buddy that I play cards with, that's a different. I mean, and you're gonna. Yeah, I mean, you can't legislate everything, and you can't. In other words, you can't really make.
The
it
chairwoman is fine with it as is for now, so we'll just
no,
move
yeah,
past
we're
it.
Good. Let's move.
Page 16.
Says okay to me.
Yep. We were okay with that. I think that Nick just saw that as it was. There was no comment there. It was a change at some other point with no track
yeah,
changes.
On,
so we're good with it. 17. We have in the law currently exemption from the definition of a gift, complimentary attendance, including food and beverage, at bona fide charitable or political events, which would mean that it would not be a gift if I gave complimentary tickets to a political fundraiser to members of my caucus or the county executive or somebody else or to a charitable event. Legislator Bartels had some issue with that, and what we had talked about as a possibility was creating a separate disclosure of exempted gifts. So if I received 5 free tickets to political fundraisers, I would have to disclose on the financial disclosure or something, you know, we would have like a separate box for exempted gifts. And we would have to disclose those.
So if I can explain, we put a pin in this one, but we talked around it a bit. You know, that makes me feel more comfortable. I can say that I have been to some charitable events, not in the function of legislator, and not having been given free tickets, but where those tickets cost well over $500 a ticket. So. That, to me, seems something, especially at our level, that could be very persuasive, getting these free tickets to these fancy events.
What events are you going to, man?
The Mohawk Preserve Gala in New York City.
Yeah, apparently.
Well, they did have that. The Mohawk had an event that I remember that I was invited to, and a number of people were invited to, and it would have been, I have no idea what that price would have been, because they were giving out, you know, wine and things like that.
Yeah,
they were very high, you know, the high cost bottles of wine. Not giving you out the wine, but the tasting and stuff.
Well, I mean, I'll give you an example. I mean, I was several years ago. I was given complimentary tickets to the Mohonk Gala up on the mountain, the Mohonk Preserve Gala, And I think the tickets were $150
yeah,
a piece.
That's more.
But Darlene Pfeiffer from the college had bought a table, and she said, you know, bring your, you know, you come, bring your wife. I think that we ended up donating like $500 to the Mohonk Preserve while we were there, which would have exceeded the value of the tickets. But I wouldn't have a problem disclosing that I received those, but I would have a problem disallowing that from happening in the first place, because there is a tangible benefit to the charity in attendance. You know, sometimes, you know, just to fill a room, you'll give cut member attendance places. And for the most part, the tickets are valued at $150, but the value that you're receiving from the ticket is well below $150.
I mean, like, and that's partly where I'm, I mean, I apologize.
Were you listed
but
as a special
guest? It's all right. I mean,
no,
as
where,
long as you're
I
respectful,
wasn't.
I don't mind the give and take going
know,
back and forth.
I
kind of prefer it, but I
try. But you know, but that's really where I'm sort of going with, where it's just like, just because the face value, quote unquote face value of the ticket is $100 or $150
or $1,000.
Well, okay, fine. But I'm just saying, but you know, but what you're actually sort of like, what was actually tangibly being sort of offered
right.
was rubber chicken, right? You know
yep.
what I mean? It's just sort of just like one of these things where, you know, there's, but I mean, this is a disclosure issue. It's not a prohibition. So I guess.
I mean, that's where I'd like to see it rather than a prohibition, but, you know, to have a disclosure.
And I said, too, that
sunlight's the best disinfectant.
Yeah, and seeing it
yeah,
might
right.
make us aware whether there was actually an issue we had to look at.
No, I mean, you know, for example, you know, Jim DeLon invited me to the Orange County, you know, Land Trust, you know, last year, you know, dinner. Like, I don't represent Orange County, but, you know, there's no tangible, you know,
well, that's the key.
You know,
that
piece. No.
Relationship
I don't mind
with the county.
Sure.
Who's or whatever the entity
yeah.
is.
Yeah.
But there's but Hector has a relationship with Jim.
With Jim,
so Jim
exactly.
gave him
yeah.
a potentially $150 gift. Like these are things
yeah.
to think
we,
through
yeah.
about
I think
how.
I think it was like $100, but still,
well, whatever.
Like, yeah,
that's
but
my
whatever
point.
It is. Yeah.
It
so
exceeds
like,
the $75. I mean,
I'm open to
right.
like having a discussion. It's just I feel like it's pretty.
Shoot.
Pretty broad, so yeah. So
well, I think you violated the law, so we're gonna have you
yeah.
shot.
Yeah, you said no. Thank you. Just double tap to the head. Remember. So.
Wow.
Well, you're gonna do it.
All right,
right.
Next. We're gonna put in a disclosure for those.
We'll put
that
in a
are.
Disclosure. Thank you.
Great. And we'll work on that.
Yeah.
All right, 18 looks wonderful.
18's good. 19, we were just removing the gifts or benefits having a value of $100 or less that are received by a county officer for the solemnization of a marriage. So this is not exempting gifts over $100, gifts of $100 or less for being the officiant at somebody's wedding.
Yeah, I felt like that's why I said why. What happened to church and state?
Well, this isn't church. This is online minister territory.
It's a civil ceremony.
Yeah,
okay,
justice
but,
of the peace.
And in fact, actually, it, as you all know, marriage is very much a legal.
I was thinking about being ordained
so.
As a pastor
be
in the Pastafarian religion. So.
All right, let's keep moving. We're up to 21.
They worship his noodliness.
It's actually very popular for
you know
people
what,
to
you
be.
Know, you know, I'm tired of your anti-marriage.
All right, 21.
Yeah.
21, we're deleting subsection L, which precludes bidding by officers or employees of the county on real property owned or acquired at the tax sale, because, you know, as the county and as fiduciaries, we probably want the property to go for the highest amount possible, which you're going to give if you're going to win one of the auctions anyway.
And you don't have a benefit over the next person.
Well,
you
can't
have to bid
on them anyway as a legislator.
Yeah, you can.
You can now. You can now.
When
but
did
you
that
can't.
Change?
Huh?
When couldn't you?
I didn't think as a county legislator that I could bid on
yeah, yeah.
properties. Up
yeah,
in
just
the,
then you have to abstain on the tax sale then,
that's
or
right.
any
yeah.
properties included in the resolution with the property that you're
which
purchasing.
Have your name on it, so
right.
it's just like you know,
like legislator
always,
Litz, by
I was
you know,
always under the impression that you could not.
Legislator Litz went to purchase. Oh no, legislator Chairwoman Bartels actually checked.
Yeah, I had to check for my significant other whether or not he could bid.
But legislator Litz had to abstain at the last meeting on one of the back to original owner things because he entered into a contract with one of the people who had their taxes foreclosed that legislator Litz paid the taxes as part of a contract for sale.
Oh, okay.
So.
Okay.
That
22.
Might be a conflict because you're doing it based on maybe information that's not.
It was publicly available in the text. All
right, 22.
And a contract is not necessary.
22. This is not going to be decided tonight, and we need to. The first one is. We could insert unemancipated before child. And then we were fine with deleting the word sibling.
What? Out of curiosity, why?
Because why should you be prohibited from bidding on something that your sibling, unless your sibling is living in your home and living, is financially dependent on you.
And that would be covered under member of the household if they are dependent on you.
It's the only place we talk about sibling.
Right.
All right, the next one, then. Prohibition of interest in contracts with the county.
Yeah, that's the one that we're going to have to put a pin in. I mean, this is a question about whether or not we want to preclude preclude them from voting on contracts that
are collectively bargained.
Right, because that's not included. There's no exemption here for collectively bargained contracts.
So we could. This isn't saying we could vote on a multi-million-dollar contract with a company that the vendor of our brother owns. Or
no, this is saying you can't.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, with a sibling out, your sibling you could on your, but you would. Are you? I would assume you would probably recuse. But there's no. We don't apply sibling to anything else in this law or into our current law. You know, it's like if you want to put sibling.
We could put family member.
Well, you already have member of the household, which is...
Saying is if your brother lived in Texas, but... Oh,
I think when it comes to contracts, it should be a little broader.
Okay.
I don't know.
So what do you want us to say?
Family member, I guess, would be at least, since we're not doing sibling, I guess.
But
I
family members, again, like, that's where does it stop?
Mother, yeah.
Six degrees of consanguinity, according to...
Yep.
Minority house.
That's the word. Thank you.
I guess it's, I don't know, it seems, you know. I
mean, I'm fine with leaving sibling in if that's the will of the committee.
I think sibling should be left in, too. I agree with that. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, just for information, it's a defined term. So it's brother, sister, half-brother, half-sister, stepbrother, or stepsister.
Possibly not anymore.
I know, but for now, that's what it says.
Okay, and can I ask?
So I think that's what we should do. I think just we had the sibling in there. I think it should be part of it.
Well, then let me ask if we're going to go sibling, just because I have to go to this level of detail, then are you going to go in-law? So you can't vote on a contract that your brother owns a company, but if your brother's wife owns a company,
well,
it's okay.
It says direct or indirect. So, again, you know, and a lot of these things are going to be fact-intensive, right? So you can't anticipate every scenario. I think that part of what we do is we trust the Board of Ethics members to interpret this code appropriately with the spirit of it. So, it does say direct or indirect. So if you're trying to use some kind of a shell game where you say, well, my brother-in-law is not going to do it, but his wife will, I don't know that that gets you around this. I don't think it does.
Right, it probably doesn't, but it might. But I mean, that'd be up to the ethics board to make that decision.
Right, we're trusting them to interpret this.
I mean, what if they're divorced?
Parent.
You know, they could be divorced and stuff like that. They may make the argument that I really have no contact with this person. And then, okay, then if the board of ethics, hopefully, they have an open mind and say, okay, they really don't. Or they're trying to be shady and trying to pull the wool over our eyes.
Yeah, exactly. And where do you stop? Is parent okay? Parents okay, so you could vote on
I think
million
you should. I think what you're really talking about is first degree relatives, which includes parents.
Right. No, I'm following on it.
Because you've included all the other first degree relatives.
So then we may want to put a pin in this and consider defining first degree relatives.
Voting on it. I mean, we're talking
that might
about
be
the people that are drawing up the right, Ryan? There's somebody that would be drawing up the
contract.
Yeah, the contract and all that. I mean, would you want someone drawing up a contract and that
nothing?
Has
I did something by myself.
His father-in-law owns the company that would be bidding on the contract. I mean, I would want that person to recuse from that, right? I mean, doesn't that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, and you would. You wouldn't need this ethics law to refuse.
So, Dave, we'll put a pin in this pending discussion about defining first degree relative and putting that in instead of
and immediate. You'd probably want to include the language of immediate family member as well, just in terms of living, because that includes people living in your household, like your
member of the household.
Yeah. Member of the household is already defined.
The thing that we do need to remember is that it's really about the intent. As Nick pointing out, so I mean, we're not going to be able to come up with every single scenario, no matter what it is. I think we put something in there. So, in other words, the intent. So, if somebody that's serving on the board has a reasonable understanding of what they feel would be unethical, shall we say?
But we should try to satisfy the chairwoman's concerns the best we can.
Someone, yes, but I mean, we can't satisfy everything.
Could we just all take a minute and enjoy the rainbow?
Is there a rainbow?
Oh, I see it in the cloud.
Oh, wow.
It's pretty. We've been working for a while here, and there's a beautiful rainbow there.
I can't see
in the clouds.
Nick. You're left out.
What did he just say?
I can't really see it that well either.
I can't see
over
it.
There.
It's all right.
Oh, there it is. Okay.
It's up in the cloud.
Thank you, Brian.
It's over there.
That narrowed it down.
No, it's pretty obvious.
It looks like an S.
I was looking at the sign.
Lawyers are very good at finding close X.
It's Superman. Superman.
I ask unanimous consent to stipulate that there is a rainbow in the cloud.
Medium.
Medium.
Hearing no, without objection,
The board is about to show
At least you can see.
If there is a
rainbow. No, I couldn't see the mom.
They're allowed to stop.
All right, so we'll just we've had a lot of discussion on that. We'll put a pin in that and discuss it further.
I imagine. Put it this way: I don't want too many pins. I'd like to have this done next.
We're gonna get it done.
Go ahead.
Okay. So just to talk about the collective bargaining issue, which I put in this comment. You know, I think we need to look to the state ethics laws, which allow that exemption. And I think that the
can you provide us a copy of that?
I will. I'll get it. I think that the my understanding of the reason for that is that it because it's collectively bargained, it's not a unique benefit to one person, the sibling, the child, the spouse.
Right.
So I will get you the state.
Yeah, I'm not prepared to specifically exempt it, but I'm willing to look at what you're gonna bring forward.
Yeah, I will.
All right, let's move on then. 27.
Yep, page 27.
Wait, what happened to the rest of the two?
What? There's more too.
I missed 26.
Oh, the subsection 3 and subsection 5.
Well, did we finish the rest on 22? They're fine. Oh, we got the relative.
Yeah.
Relative, and then what about this? Let's discuss and define what about. We're back to collective bargaining.
Same issue.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
Same issue. Thank
you. So, the next part is the disciplinary action. Trace's question was, how do we write a law that contains element we have no authority to enforce? I think that we put in this section, and, you know, it's as allowable by law. And if we can't... Oh, sorry. Oh, no, that... Yeah, sorry, I apologize. Page 26 first. There's a comment about is it final after 30 days, but it's final unless an Article 78 is filed, in which case they have the amount of time under the law of Article 78.
Again, I feel like the problem is that if it's final after 30 days, so you hit a point at 30 days where you have a Board of Ethics that can say, we have a final determination, but then you have another 90 days where it's actually not final because it could be going through an appeals process.
If I can, I think what this is intended to do is make the Article 78 ripe. So it's considered final action.
On their part.
Right.
And then your clock starts.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. So I think that's what this is intended to do. So you would have actually the full 120.
Mm-hmm. After the 30.
But the 120 doesn't start to run until the 30. That's what makes it final action.
Okay.
And that kind of
creates grounds for an Article 78.
Language.
It'd be premature if you started it before the 30 days went by.
Well, you just said. I mean.
Okay.
So it stays.
Are you comfortable with that now?
Yeah.
Yeah. More?
Yeah.
And, more. What about in other words, they're issuing, the Board of Ethics is issuing fines of up to $10,000. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. That's in our current law as well.
That is in our law.
It's pretty...
I'm concerned with some of those things. I mean, issuing is throwing out fines.
Our Human Rights Commission can issue fines up to $25,000, and nobody had a problem with that.
They wanted it higher.
Yeah, we very, very strongly negotiated down to $25,000.
Oh, that's correct. And considering that we were the ones doing the negotiating there, Kenny. But as you also know, though, Ken, there's also a process, and there's an adjudication, and there's actually a hearing officer. So clearly, there's always at least some level of legality with regards to how that gets levied. In this case, you know, it's the ethics board. There's no adjudicatory officer involved.
But there is a Supreme Court adjudicatory process attached to it through Article 78.
Yeah, but that's an appeal process.
That's
an appeal process. I mean, that's a little bit different. So it's not. By the way, I'm not trying to go and attack the $10,000. I'm just saying there's a valid point that you're basically, you've got a group of people where they can levy a $5,000 to $10,000, and there is sort of no individual or process that is sort of at least providing a certification or a check on that. That's all. That's the one thing I would just say. It's not invalid to bring that point up. That's all I'm trying to say.
Okay.
Well, I think you need to decide whether you want an advisory board or you want to get... I mean, it's we're giving the board quite a bit of power.
I mean, ethics boards are not only... I'm sorry, man. Ethics boards are not only supposed to have an advisory capacity, I don't think. I think that they're set up to be an advisory board as well as... a adjudicatory board.
So part of the reason I understand that we have all this process in terms of the appointments and such strict qualifications is that this is an important thing, an important responsibility, and if it doesn't have any teeth when there is a violation, then I think, you know, you've gone through a lot of work for no benefit. So I think it's a hardship if somebody is fined. But they do have recourse, and I think that it would be rare.
Well, the problem is the recourse is expensive.
Yeah. I think it's rare that this is a maximum of $10,000. And I know we have a recent case where there was a very steep fine. But I just expect that to be very unusual and in accord with the circumstances.
And I believe it has been so far.
Definitely been unusual. Is there a parameter that we're going to give the Board of Ethics, or once we choose those members, we kind of say, hey, whatever you think, you got $10,000 to play with, maybe something strikes you differently than something else, go ahead and have all the discretion in the world with $10,000.
Dave, were you going to say something?
I didn't know.
I mean, I think that that's the idea of diversifying the appointment of the board, is that it takes a majority vote of the board to levy any fines or to have any findings at all. So I think that the whole idea of diversifying the board is to ensure that there's a diverse point of view.
The concern that I end up having here, and this is where my concern lies, in that, yes, you have a recourse, you have an Article 78 that you can file, but what ends up happening is if you get fined, you could be paying $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 to defend yourself, not only to try to not have the fine, but you're defending yourself in an Article 78.
Mm-hmm.
So wouldn't there, I'm thinking, is there some method or mechanism that they could use prior to having to, you know, actually get into that?
Why don't you think about one and we'll put a pin in that?
I mean, I'm just thinking about that. That's what my concern is that, in other words, what happens is if, like a legislator or an elected official gets fined these type of things, they have their only recourse with the Article 78,
mm-hmm.
which means they're going to pay an attorney whatever the cost is,
yep.
and it's typically, you know, probably $5,000 minimum.
Maybe we should think about reducing the fine to maybe like $2,500, which is still a good ouch.
good.
Instead
ouch.
Of, yeah, instead of 10,000, I mean, that is steep.
I mean, because if it goes beyond ethics, and there's actually legal things that they broke, yeah. significant laws, then it's going to be handed over to the DA, and it becomes a different issue. Yes,
thank you, Mr. Chair. So, I mean, you know, Kevin, I guess with regards to the fine itself, I mean, I'm okay with the amount. I think it's just more about, you know, whether or not there is any sort of check along that process. And again, that's actually where, you know, at least in the case of the human rights law, that there's at least an individual, you know, in that particular process that sort of is, in a way, sort of certifying the accuracy of said decision when it gets made, right? There's at least somebody, you know, in a role there that, you know, is able to sort of certify that, yes, this is, you know, this is appropriate. And I guess the issue that may be here, it's not the $10,000, it's just that it's majority vote of the membership of this particular board that gets to go and decide on
right.
that, no?
Then you have to defend yourself, yes.
How about this? I mean, you know, why don't you and Dave work together on creating a section that creates an administrative hearing officer for the Board of Ethics? I mean, I'm fine with that.
And that might be...
How would
I mean,
you
we
do
could
that?
We could.
I mean, how would you do that? Do you have
the Board of Ethics would hire an administrative hearing officer?
Yeah.
In our
any penalty above $2,500,
yeah.
maybe.
Yeah. I mean, you could make a threshold because it doesn't make sense on anything above, you know, a certain point, right?
Oh, so you know, it's the idea of you know, defending your honor, shall we say, and you know, so that's why you hire the Article 78, and you end up spending a whole bunch of money, on, you know.
It's a question on how much
yep.
honor costs.
So, not to complicate things, but I think if that happens, you force the person that's been assessed, you know, to be very mindful of that 120-day statute of limitations. Because if you're going to some, you know, intermediate appeal or whatever, that clock starts running. That's state law. You're barred. So you gotta. Yeah, you got to kind of figure out how do you want. It sounds like you want some informal, low-cost appeal.
Yeah,
couldn't you make the final determination after the administrative hearing? Make that.
That's what I think. Right now, they give you 30 days.
But it's 30 days from the determination of the ethics board, so.
I mean, if you wanted to build it into that 30.
We may want to.
Mm-hmm.
Build it into that time frame.
But I mean, you know, just. If you and Hector want to work together on coming up with what you'd like to see, I've got no problem looking at it.
One thing, and I'm going to have to go, since we have lots of pins in, I'm just going to have to go and recheck, because I don't know, and maybe Ken, you'll be aware, in the new draft, does it require that the complaint be signed, like in our current legislation? You don't have to answer right now, but I feel
don't,
like
but
that's
something
to
look
we
into.
Need to...
Well, presently it can be anonymous.
It cannot be
it cannot
anonymous.
Be anonymous.
It can be anonymous, but they don't tell you.
Right,
who
but I feel like that's something we want to really think about. I don't think, initially I thought, why can't it be anonymous, but I think it shouldn't be.
I absolutely
anonymous.
Don't think it should be anonymous.
Should not be, yeah, no, so that's what I'm saying, we want to make sure that
yeah,
that's
no,
in this.
People can be throwing out anything.
Exactly, so...
I'm going to apologize, but Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Let's say that Walton's been waiting for an hour and 45 minutes, I think, for his resolution.
Well,
I
think we're finished.
What's our timeline? No, I'm just asking.
We're done right now, I think. The very last one on page 27.
We sat here for an hour.
Realize.
Oh, page 27. I started to discuss that, Dave. The chairwoman has impaneled a working group to discuss a code of conduct for the legislature. I think that this section... should be in there, at which point by law or by policy we would be able to have disciplinary action, because it doesn't say, you know, it says, you know, subject to any other sanction authorized by law or collective bargaining agreement by the appointing authority or body authorized to by law to impose such sanctions. So right now we can't impose any sanctions because we're not empowered to. But if we were to become empowered to, this section would be operable.
And your point, when we spoke, Ken's point to me was this definitely does apply to employees.
Yes.
Or non-elected officials, employees and management employees. So all of those things could apply to the rest.
And
of the
some of them
class.
Can apply now under collective bargaining.
That's what I mean. What can we come up with an example of something that somebody could do, a county employee could do, that they'd be it'd be really unethical, that but there'd be no way to hold them accountable unless we hold them accountable. Is that what you're saying here?
No, this allows any county official. So let's say a county employee in the Department of Social Services commits an ethics violation. The county executive or commissioner of social services could then, under collective bargaining, suspend the employee.
But what's the ethics violation? Because aren't there? I mean, if it was, don't we already have policies and laws that hold people accountable for doing things? I mean, so I'm just.
Let's say, and again, I don't know if this violates any other law, but let's say, he's got a neighbor that he doesn't like, and he, looks up how much money he gets in assistance and tells a third party. That could be an ethical violation that might not be
pretty
punishable
sure
under anything else.
HIPAA violation.
I think that is
probably
punishable.
A firewall offense.
If it's, under collective bar.
I don't know if it's HIPAA.
If it's health, yes, but I'm saying, safety net or something like that. I don't think HIPAA applies to safety net.
No. Then we turn around, we go, I know Rodriguez is on food stamps. I'm the guy that did.
And
the
how do you find out that he did that?
So why'd you pick me, Dave?
As part of the hearing, the third party he told it to comes in and testifies he did.
And then the ethics board takes one person's word for it, and then the executive's gonna. I mean,
no,
it just seems like you're gonna end up with.
Well, and under the collective bargaining, there's gonna need to be a burden of proof meant to do any of these things anyway.
They're gonna say, okay, now we said that he was on. Where'd you get that from? Well,
I just think there's ways to hold people accountable without empowering our
department or.
Another, I don't know.
I mean, this does not empower the Board of Ethics to. This doesn't empower the Board of Ethics to take action against a DSS employee. This empowers, based on the determination of the Board of Ethics, the Commissioner of Social Services to discipline the employee for the ethics violation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no. Right. But all I'm wondering is that are we really going to come up with circumstances? Because I've not heard. We all are involved in the county, and we all know plenty of people that live in the county, work in the county, and I'm struggling to come up with things of county employees. I go, geez, Louise, people are getting away with murder. I wish we had another process where we could hold these people accountable. I don't know if we need the ethics board to now empower. County appointees to take action in ways they couldn't before. That's all I'm wondering is, can we come up with real scenarios?
But I think that
there's
they
no,
can do
there's
that
no,
now.
What's that?
They can do that now. If there's an ethics charge against somebody can bring any employee up for an ethics charge.
Well, what are we doing here then? What do you mean?
Go ahead.
I guess this is not to go and explain what's in the law, but at least my understanding of it is that, you guys are trying to basically look at, for example, and I guess... This is to the heart of your matter. Where are the gaps between what's contractually sort of obligated, state law, any county policy, that falls into a gap, but it's still like an ethics violation, right? My question really basically becomes, this is all, of course, subject, though, to collective bargaining simply because we already know CSEA will have a conniption if we go and suspend any employee for something that has not been sort of contractually sort of obligated, or is in fact something deliberate from state law.
I mean, I can tell you how long it takes to discipline people. We had an employee who got drunk, crashed a county vehicle at 6 o'clock in the morning on his way back into the county for work.
Yep.
And it took like a year.
Yeah.
And this would speed that up?
No. But I'm saying
I'm looking for something tangible where I can go, we do need this.
And besides that, he already violated though other. He violated
I'm not saying that there would have been a violation of this law there.
All right, we're not getting anywhere. We're talking in circles at this point, so let's kind of move on.
Want to put a pin in it?
I guess you got to put a pin in this one too.
Well,
but I mean,
I think we need to take a close.
That's fine.
That's all.
And
okay.
This is what I asked.
I'll spend a month to come up with an acceptable, for instance,
scenario.
For the members of the committee, what we're going to do is once you Jay gets this together, we'll have that sent out to all of you people. Whatever the changes are. and show Mark that these are pins that we are considering yet, and I want everybody to take a look at those and to get a an idea of where you want to be with those, because I really want to get this thing off my agenda.
Of course.
It's been on my agenda way too long, and I get a little anal over those things. So go ahead.
Real quick, so what is there a difference in the county attorney still acts in the same way as they did in with this law? Because we had discussed in the last minute, a lot of people like, every time the county attorney is an opinion, have the legislative council also give an opinion.
What if we, instead of doing that, just have the ethics board engage outside counsel? I don't think that, I mean, you know, you get three lawyers in a room, you're going to get 15 different opinions.
Well, I'm
and
only talking about two, and...
Well, what about the minority council?
Well, it would just be it would just be the legislative council. Isn't that everybody's?
No, but he's. I get what Ken's, because then, in the same way that you can make the argument that the county attorney is appointed by the executive, you can make the argument that legislative counsel is appointed by
a majority member.
Yeah. You could also make the argument that an attorney hired by a board is going to be.
Yeah, but that one's a little bit cleaner though, especially if you actually clean up the process.
It is a little cleaner, but it depends on who does
the hiring.
Don't
worry about it.
Yeah, the county attorney's then hiring the attorney, correct?
No.
No.
The board of ethics. We would have to appropriate monies in the budget for the board of ethics to be able to engage their own counsel by a vote of the board. Which I would be open to, you know, to ensure independence.
I don't know. Yeah. I mean, it's.
So every advisory opinion would now the county attorney would have no involvement anymore with the board of ethics.
Well, that would be
under that scenario.
Yeah, under that scenario, yeah.
Plus, I mean, right now there's several attorneys in the board of ethics themselves.
Yeah.
But.
All right, well, I was just throwing it out there.
I thought
it would be a way to check at least. You know, you're getting two opinions, one from the county attorney who works at the pleasure of the exec, and one that works at the pleasure of it, I guess you could say, the chair or the legislature.
Technically, they're appointed by the chair, serve at the pleasure of the legislature, which was a hilarious which was a hilarious scenario. I envisioned at one point that the legislative attorney could conceivably miss one day of work every month on legislative session day because the chair could hire, and then the legislature at their meeting could, by resolution, fire, and then the next day the chair hires again.
Be careful, Nick.
That's actually
Dave. No, that's right, Dave. Be careful, Dave. You better toe the damn line here.
I'm having a lot of fun.
Anyway, let's move on. We'll be bringing this up again. Thank you.
I really want to go.
We're going to revisit that, though, too?
Yes.
Nick?
Just before we move on, what we've been examining is the ethics law. There are also floating around amendments to the charter and code, which would make them...
They have floated around several times, yeah.
Consistent with this, but just that should be kept in mind, because those also have to be voted on at the same time. So.
Yeah.
And kept consistent with whatever changes you make.
Well, correct.
We don't think that this should not be triggering in any way, shape, or form referendum.
No.
Well,
so long as... Them making those changes all at the same time will be
correct,
fairly easy.
Correct.
And again, it's going to be up to the county attorney whether or not. I mean, we're going to have a new one. So, but the former county attorney did not envision a scenario where we would need a referendum on this.
Alrighty. So we're finished with this. We'll take it up again next month.
I move we postpone it for a month.
Second.
All right.
All in favor?
In favor of the postponement?
Aye.
All those opposed? None. All right, now we're looking at Resolution 267, Amendment of the Rules of the Order.
I'll move it for discussion.
Prohibit personal attacks. All right, it was moved.
Second.
And seconded. Let's hit her up.
I'm going to be very brief. The rules currently protect legislators from personal attacks, but do not protect the staff or the other elected officials from personal attacks on the floor. I am in favor of one of two scenarios. I think that we either extend the same protections that we extend to ourselves to the rest of the people who work in this county government, or we remove the protection from ourselves. I think that it's...
When you talk about personal attacks, I'm not sure what you mean. So, in other words, if I feel that a particular employee, another elected official, is doing something inappropriate, I'm not allowed to say that?
No. I'm getting there.
Are there changes? There are changes.
There is a proposed amendment. Trying to get there. I'm sorry. So the proposed amendment as it's written in here, which I can make or not, you know, if we want to make the amendment first and then discuss it as a whole, or if we want to discuss it as a whole. I mean, I just didn't want to go through two
what
discussions.
Did it, didn't it say any person or something like that before? Now it's any legislator. What did it say before?
Brian, do you have the old version?
Yeah, I have it right here. Dave? Maloney. By the way, what I read in the newspaper was this was brought on by me having concerns with donations. Eventually it turned into a debate, and I was told not to worry about donations because of the bid process. I then talked about a large contract, and I mentioned County Executive Ken Cornell. I did not mention the executive by name. I mentioned Deputy County Executive Ken Cornell in a meeting, which I have the minutes of, is in exact quotes, said we used other considerations besides monetary value to award the contract. That's what I said that day, and that's what I read in the paper as a personal attack. Please explain to me how that was a personal attack. And if I just said, if we did pass this, if mm-hmm. I just said, Deputy County Executive, and I left off Cornell, that would not be a personal attack anymore.
I actually...
And I don't know how him...
All right, I'll just wait until he's ready for me to answer the question.
Oh, let him finish. You're jumping in there, Ken.
I'm not sure how it's an attack to mention a fact on the floor about using discretion for a contract.
All right, so you're asking this question.
Go ahead. Please explain it to me.
Well, first of all, I don't know what article in the newspaper you're mentioning where I mentioned Deputy County Executive Ken Cornell.
I was quoted. You two were quoted. You obviously talked to Patricia Doxey about this.
I talked to Patricia Doxey about
the example.
Am I allowed to finish, too?
All right. Well,
you asked me a question.
You're going back and forth here.
I didn't ask you a question. I didn't know of anything.
Wait a minute. Let me get this clear to make this short and sweet here. I've been running this to allow the flow of information. Now, when it becomes a little tougher to create that flow of information in that manner, then mm-hmm. we have to create order. So, all right, you asked the question now. No more interruption. But Senator Ronco, please.
I didn't mention any specific instances of people making personal attacks. What I said was, in our rules, we prohibit personal attacks against members of the county legislature. I think that we should either prohibit personal attacks against any member of the government, including employees and elected officials, or we should not extend it to ourselves, and we should just have, you know, a free-for-all.
All right, so I understand that, but could I ask you a question, if you don't mind?
I would be honored.
Okay. Then where would you draw the line? Like, for instance, if you feel somebody's doing something totally wrong, are you allowed, you're not allowed to say it?
It is up to the chairperson's discretion.
So the chairperson makes a decision whether my free speech is ended?
Actually, Robert's Rules of Order says that the county boards can limit debate on issues.
So
it's got nothing to do with your free speech, and you're free as you have been to spread as much innuendo through the different members of the media as you see fit with your First Amendment rights, as well as walking down the street with a bullhorn. But the idea of decorum in a public meeting is that you want to treat each other and treat other members of the government and public with respect.
Right, I agree with that concept. Go ahead.
Well, I think actually the idea of decorum, you know, even as it's applied at the, you know, federal level and the Houses of Congress and the Senate, and the reason those rules exist at those level, same as in our body in terms of the prohibition on attacks to other legislators, is to maintain the decorum so that we can have a debate within the body. When you extend it beyond, I mean, as it was drafted before, it also extended to the public, which was a serious concern of mine. But even as the changes proposed, it leaves a lot open to interpretation. And I also think it takes away the potential of one of our most important duties, which is being able to be a check on the other arms of government in the form of critique. And so what might be seen as a personal attack by you, now sitting in the body or sitting in the chair, might not be seen as a personal attack by someone else. Like, what makes it personal versus, and what inflammatory? What makes it inflammatory? I mean, arguably, any comment that is where we're going to have strong opinions on both sides is inflammatory, depending on, it's how you deliver it. It's not just what you say. And so, again, and this is some of the challenge and some of the comments that have been made before by Legislator Maloney, if we were to look on the page, if we were to take away the delivery and we were to look on the page at most of those conflicts in the of the comments in the form of a transcript, very often there isn't anyone named. And what's inflammatory is what's
the facts,
is what's seen,
innuendo.
It's the way you take the comments versus the way Joe takes the comments versus the way Kathy takes the comments versus the way the next person takes the comments. I think it's a very slippery slope to regulate our own speech such that, depending on who the given chair is, they could silence a member who was critical of another arm of government simply because they didn't want to hear it and they found it inflammatory.
Legislator Waldman has that.
I think what can be described as inflammatory is incorrectly accusing someone by name of a crime of bid rigging, and that's what in essence happened. There is a distinction, which I've made clear on the floor last month, between a request for bids, where bids, the bid price is the bid price, or a request for proposals, where there are other criteria that become involved, that are involved in deciding what's the best value for the county. So there's two separate procurement methods, and twice name someone individually, I think it's inflammatory to describe someone, and it's perceived in professional circles of procurement or in local government that such an act would be, if it had basis, would be criminal, and that could be categorized, in my view, as inflammatory, especially when...
Okay, I will eventually circle back around and ask you guys again for the attack, but specifically my words that were attacked. But first, I'll just say that what I do up on the legislature is I point out facts of donations. What I'm asking and what other legislators are asking is that elected officials stop taking those donations. I point out the contract has been gotten, donations came in. All we're asking is that the elected officials stop taking those donations. The other day, the only person I mentioned by name was Deputy Executive Ken Cornell, and that he said that we used discretion when we decided on a contract. I pointed out the facts, Brian. I'm asking you for my words that you, Ken, and you, Brian, consider attacks, because what you're saying is, and you and Legislator Ron got up on the floor that night and asked the chair that to define what I did as an attack. You said this is an attack. I don't know how that... No, you got up and used the word attack when describing what I had done. I'm asking you to repeat the words that I said that you felt were an attack. And I'd appreciate an exact quote. And I think that's what Chair Bartels was saying, that she hasn't perceived these as attacks either.
I'll yield to... The legislators who are being interrogated.
A, thank you. And I appreciate your use of the word. I think that's accurate.
Yeah.
I'm not going to use exact language right here because I don't have a transcript sitting in front of me. You know, that having been said, as I've said in the newspaper, as I've said, you know, here tonight.
You remember the newspaper now.
All right.
I actually said that I, you know.
Ben Sider Maloney.
I actually said that I remember the newspaper, but as I said in the newspaper, and as I said here tonight, my reason for co-sponsoring this has nothing to do with you. It doesn't. It has to do with what happened at the last legislative meeting is maybe the impetus of why I'm why this is coming forward now. But I've always believed and seen chairs of the legislature in the past have extended the decorum rules to other people other than legislators. I had extended it and to my using my discretion when I was chairman, one of the uncomfortable but necessary things about running a meeting is that you have to make decisions on decorum and decision on points of order and decisions on whether something is in order or not, amendments and everything else, and you have to make them, you know, spur the moment on the fly with the best information you have at the time. It's not a comfortable thing to do when you're running a meeting, but it's something that you have to do. You know, I had done it. I believe that other chairs of the legislature in the past had extended the decorum rules to others when the chair thought that a comment got out of hand. And I re-examined the rules after Tracy's ruling, and she's right. You know, that right now it only extends to legislators. I think that we should either extend it to everybody or not extend it to anybody. Because I don't believe that the comments that you were making last month would have been acceptable if you were describing a legislator by name under our rules of order.
And Senator Waldman?
And somewhat to answer the question that Joe posed before, you know, first of all, in the awarding of RFPs, they're not done by any one individual. They're done by a committee. It's usually a committee of evaluators. Also, again, to insinuate twice, because this was the second time I guess this was mentioned, I guess a few months prior, the same statement was made regarding the former deputy county executive that used discretion. The saying of so was that there was somehow something untoward and unethical, or maybe perhaps even illegal, of that use. And that's, in the case of which was being spoken of, it was not, a request for bids. It was a request for proposals in the specific instance that was twice brought up by my colleague. And I just feel that in and of itself, with professional standards, that could be considered inflammatory. And I will just want to just go on further, if I could just elaborate on this. We have, again, the purpose of making this amendment was, as I too had, going over, I had some concerns about being putting this out for public comment. Maybe that could cause a problem with First Amendment issues. But we have a right as a legislative body to impose rules of decorum upon ourselves. And that's what this is. And so it's not, I don't see this as a First Amendment issue. I see it as we're imposing rules of decorum upon ourselves, which are enforced by the chairperson, whoever that may be. So I think this is well within the bounds of the decorum section. And I agree with Legislator Ronk. If this is unacceptable, if this amendment's unacceptable, then I guess we ought to take out item number 3 in the decorum section. And but I think we owe ourselves a better legislature than that, and better meetings than that.
Well, I think what the chairwoman pointed out was the reason you do that within the legislature is the purpose is you, in order to have a debate, you can't allow attacking personal members because that would make it impossible to debate an issue.
So one of the difficulties
Maloney was going to
add. Yeah, just okay. In closing, I still haven't heard what exactly was an attack, except that it was an attack. And if I, just a yes or no, if there's a lot of donations coming in and I stand up on the floor, just so I know into the future, because I don't want to offend you guys, and I say, look, I have concerns. A lot of donations came in. There's contracts going out. I have concerns. We've even not gone with the lowest qualified bid.
the.
That's the point.
Right, that's
there.
So I can't say.
That's
no,
the.
No, I can't. I can't say. I can't tell the public that we didn't go with the lowest qualified bid.
Because
that's
in the instance you're referring to, may I please? Because in the instance, so I believe this
I'll let opinion. You. Yes, and I'll
because,
let you speak.
Because
you
in
speak.
That instance, it wasn't a bid. It was a request for proposals, and you didn't express that in your statement.
So they didn't go with
a request for proposals. As I read the definition on the floor last month, there's two different procurement actions. A request
okay.
for bid is where the fixed price is determining. You have to award to the lowest responsible bidder.
Yes.
In a request for proposals, you go for best value. It could be you could have a firm that's unqualified,
and
to,
we're using discretion.
And uses, and
thank
that's
you.
An RFP.
And that's the quote from the article that you said was an attack. And there's my
well,
quote.
I can't be responsible for
using
the author,
discretion.
The way the author interpreted.
Using discretion. That's the quote that you said was an attack. That's it. That's
wow.
in the article. I love it.
Matthew, do you want to add something?
Yeah. So
you presume I wrote the article.
Part of the difficult.
Okay.
I think might be going to the bathroom.
No, he's okay.
He's
had to get a drink.
Okay. So, part of
it's
the difficulty
just, I'm
is.
I'm sorry, I didn't clear myself.
That's actually.
Speak. I was not.
Take a trip to Venezuela. Come back and tell
me. My prosthetic quad.
So.
No, I'm good.
Part of what leads to the perception of a personal attack, in my view, is that information is being offered as though it's factual, but it's often inaccurate. So, for example...
Or subjective.
Or subjective. The claim that the members of the Board of Ethics all contributed huge amounts to the county executive was made on the floor. It sounded like a personal attack. And when I went
and
checked...
Was it true?
It was not true. In fact, the majority of the members of the Board of Ethics had made no donations to anyone.
Three out of five.
That's the majority.
That's what Dave said.
Three out of five.
I am talking, and I am being corrected as I'm talking.
All right, well, all right.
And I think it'd be, you know, that's not the chorus. So when you have material being brought forward as though it's information and being offered in a setting where none of us can evaluate the information, the person who is being named has no opportunity off because of not being there of being able to refute, this has the character of an attack. When it is information that's being brought to the board to ask us if there, I mean, to the legislature to ask us if we see there's a problem, then we can examine it and we can decide which pieces of it have meaning and should be brought forward in some way. So I think that these changes don't quite capture that, but they do get at the fact that there is a sense of, for myself, of being in a setting where someone is being bullied, and I have no recourse to stop this activity, which is unfair and unjust. And
well, don't you have recourse when you're, in other words, when you're in the debate, you have the ability to stand up and...
Yes, and I have used that. And I think that is another way of dealing with this type of behavior. But I think that the having it in the rules that the chair also has the ability to say, wait, we're getting, you know, this is, you know, if you state that there are donations that have been made and that's accurate, and then that this bid was awarded, and that's accurate, that to me is not a personal attack. When you go on to imply that this legal activity that had no way of influencing this bid is somehow criminal, I think you've gone beyond the bound, and I would like some additional protection from the chair on that. So I am sorry that we have come to a point where we might need it, but it doesn't seem that there's been a modification of this behavior of last minute, no documentation provided to the entire body, and then joining of disparate types of information to make a picture that doesn't really hold up, in my view, on analysis.
Isn't that subjective, though?
So it gets to the point of a question of infringing on free speech, and that gives me great pause. So I like this version much better than the other. And I think that it is part of the role of a chair, and I think you exercised it during the time you were chair, Legislator Donaldson, of
determining that something has gone to the point where it's not just bringing information to the body.
No, I understand that, but the other side of that is that can be very subjective. I mean, you may, you know, I've had you saying things that I felt that were totally off base, and I didn't, I, you know, so, and I've had that, you know, with other
Never
parents.
Let me know about it.
I think I have. And so, I mean, that's the issue that we're dealing with. It makes it very subjective. Go ahead. Dave was going to say something, then I got you. Go ahead, Dave.
Okay. Couple of things based on the free speech concept. First, as discussed by the federal courts, looking at some. First of all, I want to say that the change that's been suggested is advantageous because it takes the public out of it, and that raises a lot of much more problematic free speech issues. Now it just applies to the legislature, but the principles are worth the committee to consider. And the basic principle here that's worth considering is that the primary interest of the legislative body in establishing a rule like this of decorum that can infringe on free speech is, as the chairperson said, to essentially protect the debate. And with respect to the minority leader's comment, I want to point out that there is a difference between a comment directed to a legislator and a comment directed to a third party, and that goes back to the issue of the ability to conduct a debate. If somebody gets in your face during debate, using your name or whatever, but it's something that's perceived as an attack, that's the sort of thing that, if it continues, can very much shut down the proceedings. A third person is not quite the same affront to you, and I understand it's being taken to some extent that way, but in the scheme of things, it's just a little bit different, and I would ask you to consider that level of difference in terms of the decision as to what the best way to go here is. One other point I'd like to make is that one of the things that is, I think, problematic about the rule, and would have been especially problematic if applied to the public, but still should be considered with respect to the legislative function, is the use of the person's name as a criterion here for what's a personal attack. That does not exist in Clause 3, which is directed to the legislature. And I think that that's really what's at stake here, is that the use of the person's name is now being used as, I think that's what people are reacting to. And I think that that's quite problematic. In this case, by the way, some of the objections here are fairly technical, and you're asking, as I think the chair here is saying, you know, to make these judgments about what's an attack based on technical areas of the law. The person's name, especially as directed to a third person, as directed to a person in the legislature, it's obvious. That's very, very close to an attack almost any time you use a name. It's why you don't do it. Even in this room, we don't say, you know, he said, you know, you just don't do that. With respect to outside people, just simply adding the name in is now considered to be an attack, but I would ask the committee to consider the infringement on all the other forms of discussion. I mean, the perception here is that the particular comment last week went too far, or 2 weeks ago went too far. I won't get into that, but the point is it's fairly easy to see that a comment that perhaps didn't make a mistake or didn't come up with a interpretation that was objectionable but uses a person's name, all of a sudden can now be perceived as an attack. So the two things I would say is, one, consider what's really necessary to keep the quorum so that you can have the meeting go on and not get in each other's face. And two, I would suggest maybe removing the criterion of the named person, because it starts to get in the way of the legislative function.
Was any of that a legal opinion?
For fuck's sake, are we not, like, observing any kind of, like, he'd said before? I'm sorry. I apologize for that outburst sincerely. I'm sorry.
Mr. Rodriguez.
It's been a night. Mr. Chair, at this time, considering everything that has been discussed, I move to postpone Resolution 267.
I'll second
it. It was movement and seconded by the chair on the postponement.
So you don't want to talk about it anymore tonight? That's what I get. That's the purpose for the postponement, correct?
I'm assuming at this point there have been a lot of discussions with regards to intent, with regards to how presentation is made. Clearly, there are differing opinions about how presentation is made. I, of course, have my own opinions on the matter, but clearly we need to come to some measure of consensus. I sincerely doubt we are going to do that at 9:10 right now.
And the other aspect is, you know, my concern is, in other words, my comments at the special session would be inappropriate because I mentioned the name. of Adele Ryder and her conflicts?
No, I don't believe so, Dave, because it was, you know, your comments at that point were about the principal resolution, which was appointing a person to an office. There's a motion on the floor for that.
Postponement. All those in favor of the postponement?
I just want just one more comment on the postponement. I think that if we oppose the resolution, then we should just defeat it. But if we, I want for the record that this postponement is just specifically to give us 30 more days and then 60 more days and then 90 more days to just continue to postpone it. So.
Well, I think we're postponing it because we don't, in other words, at this point, we went through one resolution. We spent a great deal of time on this. This came up this month, and I don't see, right now we're at an impasse, and I think there may be room for compromise here.
Okay, I await your room for compromise next month then. Just understand that the postponement is being done without...
I looked at this thing today,
and there are changes.
And I read through it, and then you changed it today, and I have not really examined it. I have not thought about every aspect of this.
Continue to. It's fine.
And I think I do want. I too want a decorum, but I also want the idea that, in other words, my worry is, how you go about doing that. All right, I'll call a vote for the postponement. All those in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed?
Post.
All right, the resolution postponed. All right, we have the resolution dealing with amending the rules of order for the modification of the resolution deadline. We discussed this with the new county executive, and I think we came up with the idea that we were going to be postponing this tonight because we're looking at what we can do and what he can do and how to come up with something that...
I move we postpone it.
Aye. Second.
All those in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Any of those opposed? Having none, postponed. And the other resolution are being discussed in a subcommittee.
I think we could just take no action on them.
So, yeah, we're not going to take any action on I think both the sponsors of the other resolution have agreed with the subcommittee working their way through this.
Yep.
The July introduction to resolution is 268, setting a public hearing on a proposed local law number 3, a local law amending 304 of 1 of the Code of County of Ulster. What is this about now?
This is about illegal dumping of C&D as it would define it on a county level as landfilling, which is unlawful under this section of county law.
All right. So, and before we adjourn, or before I entertain a motion to adjourn. The resolution about extending the resolution deadline, changing that. I might want to consider us as a body considering the idea of moving our meeting time, whether from Tuesday back to that real old Thursday, because that would actually create more time for us in a shift round.
That wouldn't be until next year, so we could talk about that. I mean, it's just something that you guys should consider.
Because I would actually create the other days going the other way.
I think it would be up to the chair.
I thought it was done by resolution. It's not.
I mean, it hasn't been since I was chair and when Trace is chair. So.
And when you
or when John was chair, or when you were chair, the chair announces the schedule.
Yeah.
I know I got an okay.
Bet you $100.
I got an okay from the members, but that can might have changed.
I think it's an informal okay.
Sorry. Better make it under 75 so that if you win, it wouldn't constitute a gift.
$75.
Otherwise, I'll bring you up on ethics charges.
You know what I mean? I move we adjourn.
I don't have to pay.
Kevin seconds. All in favor?
<All right. laughs>
reasonable.
Ever.